end of Mark Foley's email exchanges with former pages. Members are also looking into whether House Speaker Dennis Hastert responded properly and whether there was any negligence or a cover-up. One member says a probe will take weeks, not months, to complete. Outside of Chicago today, House Speaker Dennis Hastert acknowledged that Republicans could have handled the situation better, but says he won't resign. Doing so, he said, would play into the hands of Democrats. He added that the media and Democratic operatives may be involved. In Baghdad today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with Iraqi leaders, including Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. She urged a quick resolution to end the sectarian violence. Also in Baghdad, authorities say 13 U.S. soldiers have been killed since Monday. That's the highest three-day death toll since the war began in 2003. In eastern Afghanistan, NATO took over control of the region. It's now in control of the entire country. The NATO force consists of 33,000 troops, more than 13,000 of them American. In Japan, a news agency reports that the United States has sent a military plane capable of detecting radiation to monitor signs of a possible North Korean nuclear test. South Korea and Russia are trying to convince North Korea not to go forward with the nuclear test, as Pyongyang threatened earlier this week. In London tomorrow, representatives from the U.S., Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China will meet to discuss the Iranian nuclear issue. That follows Iran's refusal to halt its nuclear program despite lengthy negotiations between European and Iranian negotiators. Russia remains opposed to sanctions and is accusing the U.S. of complicating the standoff. In California, a judge has dismissed child pornography charges against former JonBenet Ramsey murder suspect John Mark Carr, citing lack of evidence. The judge ordered his immediate release. In Pennsylvania today, funerals were held for four of the young girls who were shot to death Monday at an Amish schoolhouse. The fifth will be buried tomorrow. And in Wisconsin, a funeral was held for the principal who was killed in a school shooting last week. A Republican congressman from Wisconsin says he wants to introduce legislation that would allow teachers and other school officials to carry concealed weapons. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The XPRIZE Foundation has announced a $10 million prize for anyone who can sequence 100 human genomes in 10 days and 100 more within 6 months. Workers at more than a dozen Goodyear tire plants in 10 states and Canada went on strike today. That follows a breakdown in negotiations between the tire maker and the steelworkers union over a new contract. The publisher of the Los Angeles Times was asked by its parent company, the Tribune Company, to resign today. That's after his refusal to downsize on the grounds that that would damage the newspaper. Walmart now says Floridians will be able to buy a month's worth of generic drugs for $4 starting on Friday. Walmart later expects to expand the plan nationwide. Now that talks have fallen apart regarding a possible alliance between GM and Nissan-Renault, Fortune magazine reports that an alliance between Nissan-Renault and Ford may be in the works. The Labor Department reports that last week, 302,000 people filed for unemployment benefits. That's the smallest number in 10 weeks. Freddie Mac reports 30-year fixed-rate mortgage rates have dropped to 6.3%. Light sweet crude settled at $60.03 today. For the third day in a row, the Dow Jones had a record high close. The Dow ended the day up 16 points at 11,866. NASDAQ up 15, S&P 500 up 3. You can hear more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's 5 past the hour.
Okay! Don't you! Stop! Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We've made it to Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Today being the day of nationwide protest, as suggested and sponsored by World Can't Wait. I've heard from a couple of different places around the country through the course of the day, and I imagine we may hear from other locales during the course of the show itself. I hope we do. Big news coming out of Norway today? A giant dinosaur having been found in the ice there, as large as a city bus. I am told it is to be named Pleosaurus hastertiensis. Several other smaller dinosaurs were also found. They were carrying blackberries that had dirty Pleistocene emails from other dinosaurs. Well, I'm sorry, Agnes. I mean, the fossil record doesn't lie. No. In all fairness, no. I guess we're going to kind of serialize this evening. Oh, goody, make mine Cheerios. We're going to serialize this evening, picking up sort of where we left off last night. Refresh things. To remember exactly where we left off last night, let's go back to sweet little Katie Couric. Please, Agnes. Remember Mr. Rohrbaugh, the father of the Columbine victim that they brought onto CBS to try to some sort of an outreach to the Amish people suffering tragedy in nickel mines, Pennsylvania. Yeah, that was Mr. Rohrbaugh, Agnes. Yes, I mean. So we'll start here just as a reminder.
Because of the tragedy in Pennsylvania, we've decided to hold the free speech we had planned to bring you. Instead, we've called on someone who knows all too well the pain the families in Lancaster County are feeling tonight. Brian Rohrbaugh lost his son Dan in the Columbine Massacre, and we asked him to share his thoughts.
I'm saddened and shaken by the shooting at an Amish school today and last week's school murders. When my son Dan was murdered on the sidewalk at Columbine High School on April 20th, 1999, I hoped that would be the last school shooting. Since that day, I tried to answer the question, why did this happen? This country is in a moral freefall. For over two generations, the public school system is taught in a moral vacuum, expelling God from the school and from the government, replacing him with evolution, where the strong kill the weak without moral consequences. And life has no inherent value. We teach there are no absolutes, no right or wrong.
Oh, enough.
And I assure you, the murder of innocent.
So that's where we were when we got done last night. The disgusting right-wingization of tragedy. So I say that, or I point that out, because I want to go back to another school, if you don't mind. And it all ties together, because about this time last week, we were talking about an excellent primary level to elementary school teacher, an art teacher who got fired for taking her students to the Dallas Museum of Art, where some weird, sick, twisted little sexually repressed, hung up, otherwise puritanically possessed the Fundy parents. They seen something naked. I want her job. Dateline, Atlanta. A suburban county that sparked a public outcry when its libraries temporarily eliminated funding for Spanish language fiction is now being asked to ban Harry Potter books from its schools. Laura Mallory, a mother of four, told a hearing officer for the Gwinnett County Board of Education on Tuesday that the popular fiction books are, quote, an evil attempt to indoctrinate children in the Wicca religion. Board of Education attorney Victoria Sweeney said that if schools were to remove all books containing reference to witches, they would have to ban Macbeth and Cinderella and cease the annual showing of Monty Python and the Holy Grail to all the third graders. No, I'm kidding about the Monty Python part.
We've found a witch. May we burn her? Oh, burn the witch. Did you dress her up like this?
Well, we did do the nose. And the hat. She's a witch. She turned me into a newt.
A newt? I got better.
There's a mountain of evidence for keeping Harry Potter, she said, adding that the books don't support any particular religion, but present instead universal themes of friendship and overcoming adversity. Meanwhile, the previous June, this past, the county's library board eliminated the $3,000 that had been set aside to buy Spanish language fiction in the coming fiscal year. One board member said the move came after some residents objected to using taxpayer dollars to entertain readers who might be illegal immigrants. Days later, the board reversed its decision amid accusations that the move was anti-Hispanic. No, it was, no. See, it wasn't anti-Hispanic. It was anti-human. It was anti-reading. Because, see, if you go back in Gwinnett County, Georgia, a few centuries, a century or so, a little more than a century, you'll find that it was actually illegal to teach the slave class to read back then. And frankly, the mentality hangs on in dear old Gwinnett County, Georgia, to this day. Okay, well, they're going to read. Let's at least make sure they're not reading about any evil witches. Or good ones either, because, you know, they're all serving Satan. God, 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 God. I mean, this is, you know, it's the 5th day of October, 2006. And another mouth-breathing, idiotic, you know, these are the kind, you know, these fundies, you know, they don't even read their own Bibles. They wait for the preacher to read it to them or see if they can understand it through the stained glass in the windows. In 2006. In 2006. We want to get rid of that Harry Potter. Oh, but it gets better. It gets better. Don't worry. It gets decidedly better. Because, you know, the story of the former statewide head of the Teachers Association in Texas that was fired because a child saw a dirty statue. You remember our conversation with our lawyer, Roggy Dunn. Well, let's go back to sunny Texas. Most particularly, Conroe, Texas. Where there's another book they don't like. The book they don't like in Conroe, Texas is Fahrenheit, wait for it, 451. Not 9/11. There's not a companion book to the Michael Moore movie that I know of. No. They're bent out of shape. The Fundies in Conroe, Texas, they're bent out of shape about Fahrenheit 451. Why? And then they want it, wait a minute, they want it pulled from the reading list for the high schoolers. It's not like the third graders are checking out Fahrenheit 451. Granted, when I was in elementary school, I read the Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles, but I was precocious. I didn't get to Fahrenheit 451, I don't think, until ninth grade. I think it was required reading in ninth grade. Nice little thin little book. You can get through it in a hurry, and it has it's freighted with meaning. Interestingly, the second paragraph of this story says, Harry Potter books have been the basis of complaints in recent years. Recent years? How about this week? Harry Potter books have been the basis of complaints in recent years, but now a book that's been on literary lists for years is suddenly being thrust into a debate over what's appropriate reading material for students at one Conroe school. All right, Texans, help me. Where's Conroe? Fahrenheit 451 was first published 53 years ago. It's said to be named for the temperature at which paper incinerates. In the world of Fahrenheit 451, no free thought is allowed and books are destroyed by fire. And the firemen are the people who go around burning books, not putting out fires. They start them. So we draw in a little bit tighter and we find Caney Creek High School. 10th grade English class given Fahrenheit 451 as a reading assignment. But Diana Verm, in a 10th grader, Diana Verm, in Verm, stops reading the book after only a few pages. I won't read it no more. Why? She said she was offended by the cussing in it and the burning of the Bible. They're making me read a book about burning Bibles. Sweet Jesus, the demons is a-coming. It's a demonic book. I could feel the wounds in my Savior's hands and feet even as I read the part about where they was a-burning Bibles.
Diana complained to her father.
Her father complained to the school. She got an alternate reading assignment, Peter Cottontail or something. But now her dad is on a crusade. He's pushing the issue. Here's what he says. Oh, sit down, everybody. There will be screaming. Not mine, yours. I know the punchline.
With God's name in vain being in there, that's the number one reason, said Diana's father, Alton Verm. And
Verm.
We go now to Caney Creek High School in Conroe, Texas, where we meet the Verm family.
Yeah, God.
With God's name in vain being in there, that's the number one reason. There's...
Wait, okay. Everybody, really, take your medications. This is... We're going to hold up a little magnifying glass to the weirdness that is the fundamentalist right that want... Listen, dig it. It's banned books week in America. It really is. No irony intended. It really, really is. It's banned books week in America. Right now. And a book about the dangers of banning and burning books is under fire in Conroe, Texas. Where are the Verm family? With a cumulative IQ approaching the temperature of the inside of your refrigerator freezer, wants to ban a book about banning books. Here's the quote. With God's name in vain being in there, that's the number one reason.
There's no reason for it being red. Well, thank you, Mr. Firm. Would you go ahead and hand us your list of approved reading? Well, there's the King James Bible. Okay, I got one right here. Wonder if Mr. Verm's ever read the part there in Genesis where Lot's daughters get him all liquored up and do him. Reckon? I'm reckoning he doesn't even know it's there. And I'm sure he doesn't know about the part where Noah's kids get him wasted and do him either. And he doesn't know the part about where Saul gets completely bent out of shape because he's caught Jonathan, getting all metrosexual with David. Okay. And, you know, that's just the beginning. And then there's the little porno love letter that is the Song of Solomon. With the taking of the Lord's name in vain in there. There's just no reason for it being red. I want you to know, I spent the day trying to find the Verms. I really wanted to get Mr. Verm on the phone so he could tell me what was okay for us to read. And you know what? His pastor probably supports him. They's taking the Lord's name in vain in that book. And then they's burning Bibles. No wonder my darling little precious daughter got so upset when she seen that they was burning Bibles. They was burning Bibles after they took the Lord's name in vain. Morons. Monkeys. Freaks. Out to control your mind. The school has appointed a committee to review Verm's objections. Now, I don't believe in literacy tests before voting or anything like that, but don't you think Mr. Verm should have to pass a literacy test before he can complain about a book? Or at the very least, should Mr. Verm have to at least read the whole book? Before he gets to complain about it. See, that is one of the shortcomings of the public education system as I understand it now, and that is that the administrative staff has to be courteous to everybody. Because, you see, when Mr. Verm walks in with his complaint, frankly, I would rather live in a world where you can pick up a blackjack and hold it in front of his face and say, "Get the hell out of my office, you ignorant little stupid fundy, before I beat you within an inch of your illiterate life!" Fahrenheit 451! This is the book where the dissidents, you know, the dissidents don't go around shooting people or killing people or blowing things up. Do you know what the dissidents do in Fahrenheit 451? The dissidents secretly memorize books so that those books can be saved for a later generation. That guy over there, you think he's the baker? That's really Romeo and Juliet. The pest control guy down the road, that's Huckleberry Finn. It's a world where dissidence is marked by the dedication of a few people who are determined to hang on to the very roots of civilization until they can flourish again outside of a fascist ground. The school has appointed a committee to review Verm's objections, but students are now circulating a petition. God bless these kids. Students are now circulating a petition in support of the book.
They plan to wear T-shirts on Friday voicing their opinions. I'm going to keep trying tomorrow until I see if maybe I can get hold of somebody about this issue. Quote, "This was probably one of the greatest eye-openers that we've had in our school curriculum," said student rally organizer Daryl Lee. God bless you. Good on you, Daryl. A lot of the people who did sign said that of all the books they had to read, this was the one they enjoyed. It really makes you think about the situation. And yeah, the book was assigned during National Banned Book Week. In the complaint filed against the school by Alton Verm, he listed each objected item line by line, complete with individual page numbers. Well, hooray for Mr. Verm! He can copy a number. Besides bad language and violence, Verm lists downgrading Christians and talking about our firemen. Oh! 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 Oh, Agnes, make it stop hurting. Downgrading Christians and talking about our firemen as reasons the book should be banned. You know what the kids need to wear on their T-shirt for tomorrow's protest. They need to wear for their protest a T-shirt with. A T-shirt with the definition of irony. Our good friend John Fox is calling in from somewhere in Sydney, Australia. Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. But this 451 thing just has me ready to just crack skull.
I'm such a pacifist. Contemplate the jewel of the lotus in my navel, sing kumbaya, and all of that stuff, and. This makes me want to go out and just kick somebody's ass.
Well, you know, I mean, again, it's the absolutely ignorant missing the entire point of the piece of literature. I mean, you were saying, you know, how about reading the book and realizing what it's actually about?
Well, did you catch this line about how it downgrades our firemen?
Hello.
How do you respond to that, Jesus? You know,
I don't know. I don't know, man. It's like what my suggestion would be that anyone who has a DVD copy of Fahrenheit 451 needs to start doing public viewings of it. I mean, I have it.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to be next? No more Orwell.
That would be convenient.
Oh, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it?
No more Animal Farm. That's satanic. It's got talking animals in it, and everybody knows that the only animals what can talk is demon possessed.
You almost have to feel sorry for these people if they weren't just so bloody dangerous.
Well, you know, this reminds me of one of those old blonde jokes, John, where the blonde is walking around with a pair of little headphones on, with her little Walkman on her belt, and one day somebody pulls the headphones off and she just keels over dead, and the guy wants to find out what it was, so he puts the headphones up to his ears and he hears, "Breathe in, breathe out,
yeah,
breathe in." Breathe out. The Verm family. I mean, do they have little stickers over their electrical outlets that say "Don't lick finger and stick in here"? These people have got to be profoundly stupid.
Well, I mean, ignorance, I think, almost has to be considered like an epidemic disease in America these days. You know, a 50-year-old book. I mean, I love the film. And one of the interesting things about the film is that you had, you know, an American writer with, I believe it was a French director, and there was some massive, shall we say, language gaps on the crew.
Oh, yeah.
And you can actually, in the film, you can see that. You can hear it. But it even adds to some of the to the flavor of the film version of it, which, I mean, this just...
Well, you know, the other thing that struck me when I first read it in high school, and it stayed with me all these years, John, do you remember the way in the book they describe the television situation in that era, that time period? The TVs covered the entire wall of each entire wall of the room, and you sat in the middle of it and experienced television, and there was some sort of computer gizmo so that whenever they wanted to speak to the offstage or off-screen character, it inserted your name. You know what's weird? We've gotten to the point where that technology almost exists. I went to get a new recliner for my father the other day, and I saw a 73-inch diagonal Mitsubishi television. That is a television of diagonal measurement my height.
It's Big Brother and the telescreen. We seriously are approaching that level. And, I mean, as we know, the state of the media in America, if not the most of the planet, is, you know, nothing but a paper-thin propaganda machine. And just to go after Bradbury just blows me away. You know, I mean, this guy, you know, he's a fiction writer. I mean,
yeah, but I get the feeling he's striking a little too close to home, John.
I really, really just feel sorry for these people. I can't even tell you how much they're missing out on just by the pure fact of developing one's own mind.
I feel sorry for the kid. The dad, I want to pick up the phone and call and say, have you got Prince Albert in a can? Huh? Yeah. Is your refrigerator running? Yeah, this is this is the kind of idiot that, you know, if he's got a computer, there's a mouse in my house. If this guy's got a computer, he's probably had his identity stolen about 6 dozen times. Because anybody like this is going to be fundamentally dishonest. But his daughter, I feel sorry for, because she has been... Can you imagine, what would you have to do to a child's mind to make them think that something is dirty? All the cussing in it. All the cussing. I've read Fahrenheit 451. What cussing is she talking about?
There's very little, and I guess the Lord's name in vain, as they so see it.
I mean, is she... But the thing is, apparently that... Well, you know, I say Jesus once in a while. That's taking the Lord's name in vain to them. When, in fact, it could just as easily be construed as a prayer.
Yes. Well, and Bob, do you know who Ramtha is?
Ramsa. No.
Ramtha. Okay.
Oh, no. Ramtha?
Yeah.
Help me.
Okay. There's a woman who runs the Ramtha School up in, her name is Jay-Z Knight, and she runs this, basically it's kind of a spiritualist school in Washington State. And she channels this person by the name of Ramtha, okay? And so you're basically getting a mind of someone whose physical body has been deceased for a long, 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 long time, channeling through another human being. And there's some amazing things that Ramtha speaks of on spirituality and also about the development of one's health. And one of the things that Ramtha speaks through Jay-Z Knight is the simple fact that it's not, our health is more dependent not by what we do to our bodies, but by what we do to our minds. And this is what really bothers me about people like this that want to actually limit the scope of what is available to their children to develop their minds. It drives me absolutely insane. And what's really interesting is you've heard me talk at great length about the film What the Bleep, and this is where Jay-Z Knight channels Ramtha in the film. And We just recently got the expanded edition where you actually get the full versions of all the interviews with all these physicists and these microbiologists and whatnot that are talking about the connection of spirituality and quantum mechanics and quantum physics. And this is something that I'm so fascinated by. And it all goes down to the fact that, you know, at the subatomic level, we are all one, because we all were formed from the stuff, the goo of the universe, from the Big Bang.
Yeah. Well, the Gaia theory of the planet suggests that we're all part of a giant organic mechanism. Perhaps, you know, you and I are the same thing as like blood cells in a body.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, I can't think of the doctor's name. And another person who appears in this film, where he talks about how, you know, there are different levels of truth. You know, he talks about, I am my macrobiology. I am also which is one level of truth. There is also the truth of my cellular level. Then there is also the truth of my atomic and subatomic level. It's all truth. They're just different levels of truth. But once you get down to that subatomic level, we all came from the same goo. So yeah. We're all still connected at that level. And so there is no reason why, you know, and
so does that mean that, like, Alton Verm is a sick part of the body?
Yes. It's really interesting. One of the things that I've also been learning is the fact that we are driven by our addiction, okay? And there's a part of the brain which is just this massive factory, and it creates what they call neuropeptides, which are just these long-chain amino acids.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
And there are about, I think there's about 40 distinct ones, and there is one that correlates to every single emotion that we feel. So, we become addicted to the chemicals of our emotions.
That makes sense.
And if you constantly feel angry every day, see, what happens is that this factory in your brain pumps out these peptides, and every cell in your body has receptors. And these peptides go kind of poking around, looking for the receptor for that particular peptide. And when that peptide locks in, it's kind of like a doorbell ring. It actually changes the cell at the nucleus. And the more and more you are hammering your cells with one particular type of peptide, whether it's something that is victimization, or whether it's fear, or whether it's happiness, you can end up lessening your susceptibility to other emotions and the peptides that drive them. So I look at some of these people as people that are constantly wanting to find themselves being the victim or under attack all the time. So they're looking for these things, and they set up their own reality.
Well, see, so I know what I'm dealing with here, John, because I look down here at the article, and, you know, here's this complaint from this goober, Alton Verm, where he says that one of his complaints is it's downgrading Christians.
I tell you,
John, wait for process with me for just a minute here. That tells me that he has sat on some godforsaken Sunday in some godforsaken hellhole fundamentalist church and had some preacher tell him that Christians are under attack in the world today. This is the kind of crap that you find when you go and you look at the American Family Association. These are the goons who think that even though 80% of America professes to believe in some or another invisible friend, that they are being persecuted because they can't control the entire government and tell us how to live our lives. That's who these people are. I think you're absolutely right in your hypothesis about these people running around looking for a reason, because it motivates them. It gives them a reason. It's the little Walkman with the headphones. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, well, breathe out. It, the French have a phrase for it. It is their entire raison d'être.
Yeah.
It's their reason to be.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too about the thing with the peptides is if you're constantly, you know, just using anger as an example, every day you kind of is a new opportunity for a new day.
Yeah.
Now, if you're so used to constantly being fed the chemicals that feed your fear, and every day you wake up and your body's sitting there going, "Hey, I haven't had my fix today," you're calling out for it.
Yeah, you're gonna go.
You will respond.
And then precious lumpkin daughter comes in and, "What you reading there? What you reading there, Flower Bill?" "Well, Daddy, I think it's a dirty book."
"It's a dirty book? Show me. What are them secular humanist preverts trying to foist off on you now?"
Well, one of the...
God, I am. I'm channeling Alton Vermin. It just feels dirty, John.
Don't do it, man. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. But, you know...
Lord, I want to go out and buy a Lee Greenwood album. "And I'm proud to be an American." Oh, Lord.
All I can... All, you know, it's amazing. I've come... In my research into this, just because I, from all my audio engineering experience, I have a pretty good amount of the knowledge of motion physics and that kind of thing. Now, quantum mechanics is a totally new science. It's only, you know, like maybe about 40 or 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is really a step in explaining what spirituality is. Okay?
Okay.
And it's not the fact that it's denying the religion, okay? It's not denying any of that. In fact, very much it explains it. But the big problem that we have is that we want to divide ourselves from other people, as opposed to realizing that we are all the same, we are all connected, and that it is these religious organizations, out of their own fear of you know, staying power.
Well, personally, the true spirituality that you're talking about there, John, I've experienced, you've probably experienced, a lot of us have. And it's intensely personal. It can never be institutional. And the spirituality that these people get when they go on Sundays to their fundy churches is fake and phony. And it is to true spirituality what sweet and low is to sugar.
Yeah, and it's about control. It's not about people.
Oh, yeah. These are institutions of social control. There's about as much spirituality in it. Well, yeah, exactly.
And that's about all I have to say on the subject. This kind of stuff just drives me nuts, because it's only just going to make these people more and more ignorant, as opposed to becoming truly enlightened.
And I'm going to have
Go ahead.
No, I'm going to have a nightmare tonight about having my car break down in Conroe, Texas, and needing to get it fixed, and some guy, Alton Verm, coming up and laying hands on it to give it a spiritual healing, you know. Oh.
Well, obviously, obviously, Mr. Kincaid, your car broke down because you're a heathen.
This is another thing where my issues with the organized religion situation, and I'm not just talking about Christianity, I'm talking about all fundamentalist religion that, you know, the Catholics say they have the one truth, you know, the one truth and all this. The division that we create, these artificial divisions between people, are a lot of what's creating almost every problem we face on this planet today.
Yeah.
Because we do not look at other people outside of our little brand as being as worthwhile, equal, and beautiful as ourselves.
You know, is this your day to be profound? Because that really is, John.
This is where this I can't even tell you how much this subject is fascinating me, because there are theologians out there that are studying quantum mechanics, and they are seeing how this could be the science that actually explains spirituality.
Wouldn't that be fascinating?
Not deny it, right?
Right. Well, you know, there are people, the two physicists who won the Nobel Prize a couple of days ago did so because they've gotten another inch closer to seeing a picture of the actual origin of the universe. And, you know, I remember what it says in the first verse of the Gospel of John. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God." Who's to say that those aren't ancient mnemonics for understanding universal origins? We simply don't understand anymore.
I'll wrap up my little so-called profound tirade with this. One of the theologians who also is part of this What the Bleep film, and I suggest everyone to go to whatthebleep.com. And order this DVD. You will not regret it.
And bleep is spelled out, right?
Yeah, BLEEP, because it all comes around to the fact that the three producers who were putting the film together, every time they thought they knew what they were doing, they were saying, "What the do we know?"
Yeah.
And it ended up becoming the title of the film. And
so what
kept thinking that.
Yeah, whatthebleep.com.
Yeah. Now, One of the theologians that speaks in the film says, you know, he says, the problem with organized religion is this idea that God is some gray-bearded guy in the sky with his laptop keeping a checklist on what you do, good or bad.
Yeah, bad Santa.
And then there's this judgment in the afterlife. Okay? Well, that's really selling God short to me. And this is coming from a tried and true agnostic, you know. And Ramtha also says in the film, how can one singular carbon unit sin against such a great God? Explain this to me.
Yeah. Well, again, we're coming. You know, I hate to keep referencing people who have been on this show, but we're getting closer and closer and closer to the exact stuff that Bishop Pearson was talking about when he appeared. You know, when he didn't appear. It's not like there was a puff of smoke or anything. But you know, no, when he called in, we had this conversation, and he was talking about a world where the devil does not exist.
Right.
And this is the kind of stuff he was talking about. And I think there's potential there for profound change. I don't know, frankly, if everybody on Earth is capable of comprehending something like that. You know, maybe some people have to be motivated by a bad Santa God who's got a list and checking it twice, going to find out who's naughty and nice, and, you know, going to punish you for all eternity. You know, for that one day when you were driving that nail into that board and you missed the nail and you hit your thumb and you screamed, "God!" You're going to fry for all eternity for that. Man, what a pit.
Didn't you say yesterday you were talking about, you know, the atheist, you know, seems to be some of the most moral people you know.
Yes.
And the reason for that is that, like you said, you have one shot, okay? Not this, you know, I'm going to be judged later routine, right?
Yeah.
I definitely believe that I live and, you know, my life and my actions have a direct effect on my life now. I'm not waiting to be judged later. I'm being judged right now as I do it. And so I need to do the right thing now.
Yeah.
And it's very, very simple.
And but boy, that is a life that means you've got to constantly be on it. You've got to constantly be examining it, John. And frankly, most of most of the people who are in these fundy churches have no interest in doing that whatsoever. They don't want to constantly examine their life. They just, you know, somebody threw me in a pond one day and they dragged me up and didn't drown me. And now that I didn't drown, I'm good to go forever and anon.
And I think this afterlife judgment concept is a cop out.
Yeah.
This is how, you know, people like Shrubby are able to go off on all this, you know, fundamentalist nonsense.
Right, because as long, you know, in his world, as long as he, you know, as long as he says, now I lay me down to sleep, but, you know, before he breathes out and doesn't breathe in again, and he makes sure he says, and forgive me for killing a million people, then he gets to go to heaven.
Hate to tell you, but
it don't work that way.
There is no, yeah, it's not there. And if this is my personal belief, if we all actually accepted the fact that we are all actually one, we would have that heaven right here, right now. But because we don't, we
because
have.
Yea, verily, there would be no hunger, and there would be no thirst, and there would be no suffering. Because we would all be attending to it each and every day.
Bingo. All right, Bob.
John, thanks so much, brother.
The last time you'll hear from me for about a week as we move. And I want to, write just real quick, welcome the newest member of The Horn, our new blogger, Trouble.
Who, oh, yay.
She'll be giving the News Ninja a bit of a hand.
Wonderful. And, the illustrated war prayer yesterday just blew me away. Amazing.
I expect some interesting things to be coming out of her. And I don't know, man. Enjoy the rest of the show. My net connection will be shut off sometime today, and once it's turned on at the new place, I will.
Well, if we don't hear from you in 7 days, we're sending a posse.
Send a posse anyway, man.
Dude, we'll party. Later,
right.
John.
Love you.
Love you too. Take care. Yeah, I got an email here informing me that Conroe, Texas, is about 40 miles northeast of Houston. And you have to sit, and I was reminded by my emailer that you have to understand and not be too hard on them. Because these are, you know what I mean.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Yeah, morons. Let's go to the phones. Bob calls in from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. Yo, Bob.
Hey.
There you are.
Oh, sorry about that. I was watching The Abyss.
Oh, okay. Was it staring back?
Yeah.
It does that.
Oh, I didn't know you were on. I'm sorry. I was going to say something for a short time here. Most don't know, and others don't care, okay? Most don't know, and others don't care. You got the ignorant and the those that are just absolutely uncaring of what's going on around them, okay?
Yeah.
And that's what we got, Bob. And you're trying to wake them up. I know you are. You're trying to wake up the ignorant, okay? The ignorant are those that we have to look at. The people that have no idea of what's happening. And the other ones, the ones that are just, they're just fat, dumb and happy, forget them. You can't bring them back. You know, you talk about the religious right, you talk about the, you know, religious left, you talk about, you know, you talk about a lot of stuff, but guess what, son? It's all about you. Because guess what? It is you. This radio show revolves around Bob Kincaid. Absolutely, you are the man. Now be the man.
Trying.
Well, hammer them like my Lord. Just hammer the hell out of them until they kick you out like they just can't. Because, hey, you have mighty forces trying to drive you down, and you're like Jason after the Golden Fleece, if we want to talk, you know, back. You're going after something, and you have value. And your lady. Oh, I love her very much.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, the people who lead these benighted efforts, you know, your Dobsons and Falwells and Robertsons and those creeps, Bob, they're, you know, I know them for what they are. The sad thing, though, is that there are decent, incredibly decent human beings who are following them. And it's heartbreaking because they really are good people. And if you could just pull them in out of the darkness, if you could just get them in out of the night for a little while and deprogram them from the cults that they're in, they'd have a chance to actually see some real meaning in their lives that wasn't defined for them by someone else.
But you know what I feel? What I feel deep down, I feel sad. I feel sad. I feel just a deep, abiding sadness. You know?
Yeah.
I feel in that sadness, I touch the heart of God. Because I think God is sad. God is so sad that this creation of His, if you want to talk creationism, that this creation of God doesn't even understand why created this in the first place. And it was to love one another as you love yourself. And that's the ticket. You know? I love you, Bob Kincaid, as I love myself. And I love Agnes the same way. With all my heart, all in me, I love you and your people. All the people that listen to this program are my people.
Yeah, it begins to feel like family, doesn't it, Bob?
Yeah. Bob, that's what it is. I love you as a son and your wife as if she was my daughter. And my dear wife loved her the same way. And we give to you all we have. But you got to give. You can't take. You have to give. And everything you give will be given back to you tenfold if you only give, Bob.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. There's no lie in that. It's the God's truth. It's from, if you want to call the, if you want to go back to biblical stuff, then we can do that. Or you can go back to the, you know, scientific stuff.
Well, or you can, I mean, you can go back to the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita. The creation mythos of the Hopi, the Maya, the Mexica, the Toltec, the Olmec. There's a core principle at work in all of it, Bob. No doubt about it.
The same language in any culture, but the truth is that if you love, you will be loved. If you hate, you will be hated. And that's the fact. It's just that simple. If you hate, you will be hated. If you love, you will be loved. So, hey, I go back to the 60s, you understand, son. I came back from an ugly place, and I found love. And I just want to exude that one philosophy. If I could do that one thing before I die, love thee one another as I have loved you with all my heart, all my soul, and all my mind. All of you out there that listen to this, love each other as I have loved you, and I love you now. And love is the answer. There's no hatred in my voice.
Amor vincit omnia. Love conquers all. Bob, thank you very kindly. We've got to go to the news.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I hope there's love in the news.
I do too, but I ain't betting on it.
Well,
you take care, Bob.
You and your family, and love to Agnes.
Thanks.
Good night, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Jump right in if you want to, 877-443-2366. We'll be back after the news. I'm Bob.
I paid all my dues, so I picked up my shoes. I got up and walked away. Oh, I was just a boy. I didn't know how to play. Worked hard and failed, now all I can say is I threw it all away. Oh, I was just a boy.
This is the Quality News Network. A health ethics subcommittee has launched an investigation into whether Representative Mark Foley's email exchanges with former pages. Today, members approved the subpoenas of dozens of documents and testimony related to the scandal. Members are also looking into whether House Speaker Dennis Hastert responded properly and whether there was any negligence or a cover-up. Hastert has acknowledged that Republicans could have handled the situation better, but says he will not step down. In Idaho today, officials confirmed that a two-year-old who died last month was infected with the E. coli virus associated with fresh spinach. Yesterday, the FBI raided California-based Growers Express and Natural Selection Foods to determine whether any food safety rules were ignored. In California, an appellate court has ruled that the state's ban on same-sex marriage does not violate the constitutional rights of gays and lesbians. The judge says that's because of California's domestic partner law. New York and Washington state courts have upheld similar bans. In Baghdad today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice urged a quick resolution to end the sectarian violence, adding that the situation is not being helped by, quote, political inaction. Now in its fourth year, the war has cost more than 2,700 American lives and more than $300 billion. Also in Baghdad, authorities say 13 U.S. soldiers have been killed since Monday. That's the highest three-day death toll since the war began. At the United Nations next week, the Security Council will begin discussing possible sanctions against Tehran. Iran has refused to halt its nuclear program despite lengthy negotiations between European and Iranian negotiators in recent days. Tomorrow, representatives from the six major powers will meet in London to discuss the issue. Russia remains opposed to sanctions. The oil ministers from the 11 members of OPEC may cut back production by 1 million barrels a day in response to the recent drop in oil prices. One delegate says an emergency meeting may be held in the coming weeks to decide when to implement the cutbacks. In California, a judge has dismissed child pornography charges against former JonBenet Ramsey murder suspect John Mark Carr, citing lack of evidence. The judge ordered his immediate release. And Malaysia is concerned about preserving its national language of Malay, so residents will now face fines for using Manglish, a combination of Malay and English. You're listening to QNN.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Food and Drug Administration approved a fifth seasonal flu vaccine today. This will boost the number of doses available to 115 million for the upcoming flu season. Walmart is already expanding its program to sell a month's worth of generic drugs for $4. Customers in all of Florida will be able to buy the reduced-priced drugs beginning Friday. Walmart later expects to expand the plan nationwide. Retailers report strong September sales except for Walmart. Analysts say lower gasoline prices and cooler temperatures contributed to the shopping spree. Starbucks has announced it plans to have 20,000 stores in the U.S., up from the current 12,000. The company also plans to have 20,000 stores internationally as part of its long-term expansion goals. Boeing says it delivered 100 commercial airplanes in the third quarter. That's up from 62 in last year's third quarter. Shares in European airline maker Airbus dropped today after its managers announced it could take up to 15 years to catch up to Boeing. Two-thirds of fake goods seized in Europe come from China. That's according to the European Commission, which also lists Russia and Chile as top offenders. Light sweet crude settled at $60.03 today, and for the third day in a row, the Dow had a record high close. The Dow ended up 16 points at 11,866. NASDAQ up 15, S&P 500 up 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. Parents.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
So glad you could be with us this evening. I'm Bob, superiorly assisted by Agnes. And I've got an email here from our pal Andy in the Netherlands. Andy says, just reacting to what I've been hearing tonight, please allow me to get evangelical. You get evangelical if you need to, Andy. We are in spiritual warfare. Everything that is happening now is at the highest level a spiritual issue. Not religious, but spiritual. And all the wrong people are monopolizing the message of Jesus and any other Messiah that has ever been. The fundies promote a pre-messianic message, and the liberal Christians or agnostics and so forth promote a post-messianic message. After all the research I've been doing for years, it comes down to the messianic message, regardless of religion or denomination. I think it's time to take back what is rightfully ours, the Messiah. These right-wing crap-asses all over the world steal everything that is not rightfully theirs. Christianity, Judaism, Islam, so forth, they're all liberal worldviews. The right-wing has no legitimate claim to them. I believe in truth, says Andy. I'm right there with you. I am right there with you. Now, I'm going to do everything in my power to behave, but I have found Alton Verm's phone number. I will wait. I'm not going to give it out. I imagine that there are that the normal people there in Conroe, Texas, are giving him enough unmitigated heck. We won't say unmitigated anything else because I don't know, Mr. Verm might want to tattle on us to send it or pray at us or something, or cast the demons out of Agnes, and then what good would she be? I know. But this, you see, I mean, this is only where we started this evening. It gets more bizarre, and I will prove it to you shortly. Right now we go to the phones where we're joined by Dave calling from Eureka, California. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Bob. Good to hear from you, too. It occurred to me that you may have discovered a new cabinet-level official for the Bush administration.
Really?
Yeah, it seemed like Byrne there, he, at the very least, I would think, superintendent of West Point or something like that. Look, it sounds like the kind of folks they're looking for, you know.
Yeah, somebody in charge of burning the books.
Yeah, maybe the Air Force Academy or something, whatever that they...
Well, you know, what's particularly interesting is this past week, Laura Bush, you remember when George released his reading book and we were his reading list and we were all utterly disbelieving of the fact that he had ever gotten past the word Camus, let alone read a book by him? Remember when the list came out a few weeks ago?
Uh-huh.
Well, Laura released hers. And, you know, there are some to-be-expecteds on there, the Little House on the Prairie series, the Little Women, Louisa May Alcott, Hop on Pop by Dr. Seuss was on her favorite book reading list. Oddly enough, Huckleberry Finn was on that list.
which has the N-word and, you know, 50 times or something? And betrays, you know, as brilliant a visionary as he was, Twain was also a product of his times and very much a racist. And this is, you know, this is a book that has been sought out for burning from time to time too. And there it is, you know, it's I imagine, you know, Laura Bush, I know she chuckles every time she sees the N-word.
Well, and I thought W was kind of nearing his peak performance the day he was reading My Pet Goat.
Well, you know, that's I've been trying to get a copy of that all along, and it's hard to get anymore. I think it was. I think the entire press run of it was bought up, Dave.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I have a heck of a good program, and
thank you.
You put things in a good, clear, thoughtful way, and I appreciate it much.
Well, it's a joy to hear from folks like you and know that you're out there because a microphone can be a pretty intimidating looking thing until you find out for a fact that it's actually a connection to other people who share your thoughts, who actually care about this country, and who want to see change. And then it changes the entire perspective behind why you fire it all up and do it every evening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've come to appreciate the whole horn lineup. I shared with Dr. Bill the other day something you may have heard too about the brilliant scientist who had solved the age-old problem of the evolutionist. That you'd heard that one.
Please, go ahead.
Well, he announced that he had done that. He had solved the age-old problem of the evolutionist. He had discovered the missing link between the gorilla and civilized man, and it's us. You know, when you think about it, things start making a whole lot more sense. It's like, you know, it explains a lot of Texas, our place and time.
And yeah, it certainly explains James Dobson, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, D. James Kennedy, and moreover, to a certain extent, perhaps the people, the weak, you know. And you can't look to tell. It's a process. It's a matter of brain function, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're so weak that you have to follow one of these people, you're not there yet.
Yeah. I would have to think that if anything close to what the neocons are putting forth as a Christian God, that's a God that's got some serious explaining to do.
Oh, yeah. And, well, you know, it's interesting. If you go back and you read the book of Job in the Old Testament, Job finally gets an opportunity to look him in the eye and say, hey, you know, look what you did to me. You know, you did everything short of kill me. You killed my children, you killed my flocks, you killed everything I had, you took my home from me. I want an explanation.
Makes sense to me.
And you know what God says to him?
Mm-mm.
I'm not going to tell you. It's none of your business. Because there is no explanation.
No, if there is a power up there kicking back with his feet on the desk while what's happening to this country right now is happening, and that has the power to intervene and do something, that calls for some serious explanation to me. The harm.
Well, that sounds like a devil to me, and not some sort of beneficent creator. Does it you?
Not even a little bit. No. You know, it's like, you know, all of the founding fathers, contrary to what these cons are trying to have us believe, for the most part, were deists.
Right.
They believed that there was a God that set things going but moved on and lost interest or died. And so we never did you have Washington or Jefferson, Madison, a lot of them genuflecting or using the big G in the...
Yeah, the hardcore conservative was a Unitarian Universalist, and that was Adams.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think he may have actually been a theist of some sort.
Well, that's the point, you know. With the Unitarians, you know, everything counts, everything's in play. But you know, that's about as conservative as the founding fathers got.
Yeah.
You know, I've always held to the belief that basically deism was agnosticism without the word for it. You know, that's why you get a phrase like nature and nature's God in the Declaration of Independence. Because other people tried to get him to you know, to put in, you know, Jehovah, Yahweh, that kind of stuff. Oh, no, Thomas Jefferson says, that's not what I'm talking about.
They twisted his arm to get the nature's God in there.
Right. That was as far as he was willing to go, and you know, and I think it was a real sticking point.
Well, I was early in my career in the Army with thousands of unanswered questions that I discovered a book, well, several, Bertrand Russell. He made me do a lot of thinking. I was on my way over to the chapel with the Bertrand Russell book, throwing it up and down, and he pointed out that there are some 5,500 recognized religions in the world that believe that they are the one right true religion. And more than half of them believe that everybody else was doomed. So he said, on that alone, I think one needs to reflect a bit on whatever one you're a part of right now. So, and I thought, he's right. He is right about that. So I walked by my fundamentalist religion to the coffee shop, and that was the end of it for me. But,
well, I don't know. I don't think it was the end of anything, Dave. It sounds to me like a heck of a lot like it was the beginning of things for you.
A moment of enlightenment. But I am a Unitarian. I'm active with them and social action and whatnot. We did our demonstration in Arcata today, but we've got a big one coming up here in Humboldt County at the courthouse on Saturday.
How did it go today?
Well, it was a last-minute spontaneous thing in a wonderful little town. It has a big university and a lot of progressive-thinking people. There's more registered Greens than there are Republicans in Arcata. And so just on that last one, maybe 10-hour notice, 90-some people showed up. One fellow drove down from Oregon, and we all walked about with our signs. The police were really good to us. The chief had approved our doing it right away and said if we needed any help, just give him a call. So as a matter of fact, we did. Some crazy guy showed up and was going to do a front everybody off and strip down thing, and they came and dealt with him for it. But everybody in that town is, we love you, thank you for being there, and we say come join us, and many of them would. So,
well, that presents some hope.
Yeah. I expect it'll be several hundred people here in Eureka this Saturday. And anybody that attended one today and wants to do it again, if Eureka, California is in reach, come on up or down.
So. I wish it was within reach for me, because that would be something that would be a pleasure to be a part of, Dave.
Yeah, well, we hope to have some very good speakers. Maybe David Cobb will be one of them, the head of our radio station here, very progressive radio station in town.
Mm-hmm.
And several people will be talking on such subjects as 911 truth and election fraud, and they all kind of tie in together when we look at what we got.
Well, it all becomes part of a cohesive whole after a while. There are people, Dave, who believe that 9/11 is the linchpin to understanding everything else. There are people who believe that if we don't change the black box voting, that nothing else is worth much. Others believe the war has to end first. And the message that has to come out to all of those people is that those are all valid issues.
I know they are. And I hear one promo there at Head On, and I believe it's by Bob Kincaid, who says that we elected by overwhelming majority an Al Gore for president, and look at this nerdy little goon that we've ended up with.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. Well, you call it. And it is because of election fraud. They stole in the country, and now they want to steal everything they can get their hands on.
Well, until such time as I know that my vote's counted, I'm going to hesitate to play fast and loose with words like free. Dr. Bill did a lovely job earlier today talking about what it means, you know, what does freedom mean, and what does, you know, a functioning democracy mean. He did it in terms of Iraq, and by the time he was done, you know, I was just absolutely convinced that there is no possibility of anything that we want actually taking place
in Iraq or anything that George Bush wants. If those people develop some sort of free participatory government, it will be an organic thing that develops out of their own minds and not out of out of some Western tradition.
Yes. Well.
Yeah.
I've got yet one more thing to do today. I'm with the Veterans for Peace, and this is our monthly meeting. It's been a hectic day, but I did listen to Dr. Bill this morning.
Yeah, wonderfully thought-provoking man. I get to sit here and produce some days, and I never cease to be moved and amazed by the stuff that the way that he presents things, because it's all very literally progressive. It progresses from point A to point B, and the next thing you know, the light goes on for you, and you're going, well, of course.
Yes, indeed, and I have loved Guy for as long as I can remember, and Mark and Bruce, you've got a wonderful crew there, a wonderful team.
We do indeed. We are very fine. It's a little band of folks who share a lot of things in common. We have a common vision. We have a common hope for this country, and I hope that it comes out on a daily basis, Dave.
I hope so, too. I hope you grow to where it's, I think anybody that chooses to be a sponsor on your station right now will have an awful lot of devoted followers. They may not know that, but I think there's a lot of us that would say thank you for helping to support this program.
I hope we can get to the point where, right now the biggest thing we need is a staff.
Yeah. Well, you've got a whole team there in Agnes, don't you?
Well, she is. I mean, she's developed two more arms today. Pretty soon, I think she's going to have the entire full complement of seven. And then I don't know what's going to happen. Dave, you take care and have a wonderful evening, all right?
Thank you so much, Bob.
Bye now. Let's go now to our good friend Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hi there, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm busy checking up on how things went today.
And how did? Are you finding anything out?
Well, I sent you an email clip, a video clip of the Seattle protest. It was a really nice big one.
Oh, good. Yeah, I can't open videos while I'm on right now.
I understand that. But yeah. Figured you might want to look at it. It was quite a few. A lot of people, according to the news report that my husband picked up, both the people in Portland and the Portland protest and Seattle were people in both groups were pepper sprayed.
Oh.
Yeah, seven of them in Seattle were busted. I don't know about Portland. I'm going to be checking on that next.
Well, have we? Okay, so that's Portland, Seattle. Dave said it was a wonderful, little impromptu affair that they had there, where he is, and another one will follow suit this weekend in Eureka. Anything on down the coast? Did you hear anything about Los Angeles or San Francisco, Berkeley?
I'm still checking.
Okay. Well, you'll keep us up to date, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's a start.
Yeah.
It is a start. I heard from one person who was involved with the Pittsburgh effort who said it was, who was very, very depressed about the turnout and very, very saddened about the attitude of those, people just stood by and looked on in sort of zombie-like, that blank look on their face.
Yeah.
And the phrase that was used was, well, apparently in Pittsburgh the world can wait. But there is value to everybody who put their feet on the street today, Susan.
Yeah, and I don't know the exact size of the one in Portland, but I do know that they were very noisy, and they were very organized. The one in Seattle is due to continue all night.
Oh, wow.
They're having a sit-in.
I wish I knew somebody who was participating in that one. I would love to hear what's going on there.
Yeah, well, I put a post up on the blog, you know, giving the numbers, saying if you are in one of these protests, give somebody at the horn a call. Let them know what's happening.
Well, I've had a couple of calls. I had a call from, I believe, Columbus earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
And another call, I can't remember where the other call was coming in from, but a promise to update us during the program, and I hope that we will. This is, Susan, let me get your thoughts here for just a second, because your heart's in the right place. I know that, and this is what I received with regard to the Pittsburgh event. I just returned from the Pittsburgh World Can't Wait protest. Actually, it never really happened. About 50 people showed up, mainly hardcore activists from a local civil rights group. Hardly no one else showed up for the rally. There were more cops there than protesters. The cops had all their lights flashing and had dope-sniffing dogs. The group of 50, demoralized, sort of staggered out into the street for a march. I was so angry and depressed that I just sat down on the steps at the entrance and watched the people now on their lunch hours, not even noticing the protest, talking on cell phones, chattering with friends. They didn't seem very preoccupied with the rise of fascism or the potential war without end. They didn't seem too broken up about the civilians being butchered in Iraq and other places in our name. They didn't seem to care too much about the torture bill passed by Congress. They reminded me of zombie bubbleheads, their hollow eyes betraying their empty, pathetic little minds as they come and go on their way to nowhere. It was depressing. I suddenly realized how bankrupt this country really is now, how empty and shallow these people really are behind those apathetic eyes. I no longer have a country. I cannot be part of this evil cyborg culture. It is the antithesis of freedom. And I don't...
Yourself said it, Bob, quite a while ago. If you keep your head down and you're willing to feather your soul, you can live quite nicely in a fascist.
I guess that's what those people were doing. But the question becomes, Susan, what is it that changes it for people? Honest to God, if we canceled the NASCAR season, we'd have more people in the streets.
It's going to have to be something. People are going to have to find something that they can get mad about. With me, that's not difficult. I get mad really easily.
Yeah.
But a lot of these people, they have been so pounded down and so beaten that it's basically, why bother? It's not going to change.
Well,
something's going to have to come up, slap them in the face.
Well, I don't know what happened, but see, okay, there's the next line of inquiry, Susan. We got slapped in the face on September 11th, okay? And then I'm not going to go into the whys and wherefores or anyone's particular theory of how that came about or who did it.
You know what I think?
But we got slapped in the face on September 11th, Susan,
mm-hmm.
And the most that most of America, the most response they could muster was to put a flag or a yellow decal on their car.
I know, those stupid yellow things. Oh,
yeah. And they felt like they were somehow participating in some kind of an effort, and then we turned around, and most of America, at one point 70% of America thought that Osama, that Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11, and the most that we could get was their quiet acquiescence in slaughtering 150,000 innocent Iraqi men, women, and children who had never raised a finger against us.
You know who I blame for most of this? Rush Limbaugh.
Well, yeah, he's a starting point.
Him and his cronies, the whole talk radio culture, the whole soundbite culture, have basically convinced the American public, don't worry, you don't need to think, we'll think for you. And if you say something often enough and loud enough, people will eventually believe it. Most people, anyway. Except people like us who are too stubborn and insist on thinking for ourselves. That's why the conservative movement in the Christian far right has taken off so much, because the pastors get up and they say, you don't need to do any thinking. I'll do it.
We'll tell you anything you need to think about.
Yes. You don't need to read the book to determine what the Bible means. I'll tell you.
Well, and that's why, Susan, you know, it may seem that this little story out of Texas didn't have any real overall meaning. But when I read it this evening or this morning, this afternoon, whatever.
Yeah, I went ballistic.
When I read it, it does have meaning. You know, yes, this is an isolated incident in Conroe, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? This kind of thinking is repeated millions of times around the United States every day.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, on our buddy Luke's recommendation, I stayed up really badly late to watch the rebroadcast the second time around of Bill Moyer's America and his coverage of the Jack Abramoff scandal. And it came to this part where Tom DeLay is getting pictures and prints after he's been indicted, you know, for essentially subverting the government. And he said, you know what was going through my mind? I was just thinking, let the light of Jesus show out of my eyes in this mugshot.
Who said that again?
Tom DeLay.
Oh, good.
Tom DeLay, you know, I mean, and I mean, it was there. I mean, it wasn't like it was in print. No, it was his voice saying, I just wanted to let the light of Jesus shine in my face as they took my mugshot.
Yeah, well, he can.
But the thing brilliantly, if you get a chance to see this, Susan, you really must.
Mm-hmm.
It laid out just chapter and verse from beginning to end the whole filthy, sordid, the DeLay, Abramoff, Michael Scanlon, Ralph Reed affair. And the people who got ripped off were, for the most part, members of Native American tribes. And, you know, there was testimony from one of them where he said, well, you know, of course we gave him several million dollars. That's how we thought, that's how they said Washington worked.
Yeah. Actually, I think I can think of one thing that would make this country rise up very quickly.
What's that?
Proof.
Proof?
Proof that the Bush administration engineered 9/11.
Yeah, I think
they would have to protect him from the mob.
I think it would too, but by the same token, you got to remember that same person that you blamed for the war and the rise of conservatism would be there, and I've got proof of it in terms of the Foley scandal that I hope to get to later this evening, Susan. They would, and I'm not trying to be overly sarcastic, although I suppose I am, Susan. If you had videotape of George Bush running up and down the stairwells of the North Tower, planting little round black bombs, Rush Limbaugh would have an explanation for the dead from the neck up followers that tune in their millions every day. My friends, those were fire protection devices. It's, you know, it's the old gag that I've used for a couple of years now, that there is a certain segment of this society that if they were shown video footage of George Bush drowning kittens, they would swear it was a baptizing.
Well, that's because the American people have, to a large extent, been brainwashed. They need to be reprogrammed. And that's where you come in. And Mike Malloy comes in. And all of the other liberal talkers come in.
Well, you know, I hope we can get to the point where we're reaching out on that level. It's so, you know, it's like I was saying to Dave, it means something to know that there are people beyond the wire that extends from this microphone. And it, you know, maybe someday we grow to the point where we're reaching millions of people. But right now, the most important thing we can do here is reach the ones that, you know, and we're reaching thousands. We're not at millions, but we're at thousands. And encourage those people
to spread the word.
To spread the word, not necessarily about the program itself, but to spread the word that there is another way to live, that there is an America where we can live in freedom from fear,
mm-hmm.
and that our freedom itself will be a beacon of hope unto the world.
and to empower people to talk back to the people who follow the Dobsons and the Falwells and the Bushes and the, you know, the Hastert's and the DeLays and the Frists and the, you know, the Rick Santorums. You know, the thing that came out of the Bill Moyers piece last night, Susan, you know, it was 3:30 in the morning and my little eyelids were propped open with toothpicks just about. But it was such a stunning display of what an absolute ripoff we have had of the American dream.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, I think it's something like literally tens of millions of dollars are spent per month by lobbyists, you know, just bribing our lawmakers.
Did you hear about the, I think it's $20 million that Bush has put into the budget for a celebration for the end of the war?
When's that going to go down? I mean, when does the clock in the fourth quarter tick down? How are we going to know? I mean, they've told us it's a war for generations, Susan.
Yeah, well, maybe he's got an October surprise to end all surprises, but he's got, I think, $20 million in either this year's budget or he's going to fold it into next year's budget, and is the money's there.
So they're going to dummy up a fake end of the war then?
I don't know, but what gets me is, they zero out traumatic brain injury research, but they'll spend $20 million.
Well, but this is the same crowd that spent $40 million on an inauguration. The second one, not the first one, the second one, you know? That's really gross. They had the war going on. 9/11 had already happened, and they spent $47 million on a one-day party in Washington D.C. Mm-hmm. You know, for that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout.
I'm sorry.
I'm getting nasty again.
Oh, everybody show up in Washington to either have the biggest protest in history.
Well, that's what our buddy Mitch there in California keeps talking about. Is, you know, if we take back the Congress, it's a party.
But if they screw
us out of the election, it's something else.
The more I like it. I have to admit it. And, you know, I don't know how I get there, but...
Yeah, me either. You know, it's
a little bit further.
You know, I'm not pulling anybody's leg. It's a challenge here, just putting food on the family.
Yeah. We're well acquainted with the local food bank.
It gets, you know, it's all worth it. But at some point, you know, it's not just average Americans who have to get awake. Some of us who are more highly motivated than others have to put our feet on the street.
Yeah.
And I include myself in that. I'm in a very rural area. There really wasn't a World Can't Wait protest for me to go to today. But I tried to do my part by sitting here by the phone in case there were arrests or in case people needed to reach out some way or another.
Well, with me, it's a case of, I've got the same problems Arch does. Physically, I'm just not capable of going in and marching for miles.
Yeah.
Spirit's willing, but the rest of me just crapped out.
Yeah, I understand that. Susan, thank you so kindly. So good to hear from you. And keep us updated as the information comes in, would you please?
I'll probably be posting it on the blog.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Our good friend Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. We go now to the great state of Maine and our good friend David. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. Before I begin, I'd just like to say Bill O'Reilly is the Cliff Clavin of media without the mailman uniform. People can figure that one out.
Yeah, don't make me do my Cliff Clavin impression. It's way too good.
Okay. There's actually a clip on it. I don't know if you've ever seen this. There's a clip of John Ratzenberger singing on the Macy's parade. It's so bad.
Oh, it's got to be.
You know it. I actually have a story tonight about West Virginia. I can't believe it.
Oh, wow. What do you got?
Yeah. Well, I saw this documentary called The Devil and Mr. Daniel Johnston. And it's about, I don't know if you know who Daniel Johnston is, but he's an alternative folk singer-songwriter hero. He's on the name of so many people, from Beck to Tom Waits to you name it. Just anyone on the cutting edge that's real artistic and a little bit obtuse. The thing about Daniel that's interesting about him is he grew up in an extremely evangelical right-wing family. But they were creative. And that can be troubling because if you're creative and you're not right-wing, it spells disaster in a lot of ways.
Yeah, if you're in that right-wing environment, for sure.
Right. And in the documentary, it goes through Daniel's personal trials of fire, basically. And the interesting thing about Daniel is he wasn't just a music artist. He also made his album covers and art to go along with it. So you saw the pictures inside his head. And what you would see, and also another interesting thing about him in the movie is Daniel had this obsessive compulsive disorder, and he recorded everything on tape. Even when he got in trouble at the Statue of Liberty for putting graffiti on the stairwell, you hear the policeman say, "You know what you're doing is." I goes, "Why'd you do that? Don't you even know what you did?" And you hear the policeman's voice, and it's just kind of really bizarre. But one of the things I noticed about it was how far the family pressured Daniel into this Christian evangelical, and it started merging into what his obsessions were, which were comic books. And he was really into Casper and Captain America.
Oh, wow.
And the Beatles. Now, if you mixed Casper, Captain America, the Beatles, and the Bible together in an extreme right-wing, you know, this is a dangerous concoction. This is more dangerous than any IED or a suitcase nuke. You got a walking time bomb right here, basically. And the thing that...
Well, thank God it's not the Silver Surfer.
Right. It's not the Silver Surfer. Actually, he has a... He does a parody of Silver Surfer in the movie. He draws him up. I forget what he calls him. But the point is that on Daniel's journey through the timeline of the movie, what happened was his mind started deteriorating, and he started falling back into what his mother. And there are tapes of his mother screaming at him, get up, don't you want to get right with the Lord? Stop this art and music. It's nothing. The devil is behind it. And you just hear it in the background while he's playing the piano. It's just like, you're not supposed to be listening to it. You know, this is a private moment. But this is Daniel's, basically, his experience. He's recorded his whole life for you, basically.
Yeah.
So you're listening to this, and he's like 16 years old, or maybe even 14, and you just hear his mother constantly go off. And what happened is eventually Daniel went to college. He went to Aberdeen. So you know where this is going. He went to
Aberdeen
College,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Aberdeen Christian College. And he started going crazy. And literally, he started hallucinating. He just went crazy, and the parents took him out, so they put him in a local college. And it was an art school. And he met this girl named Lori. Now, see, this is the problem where you have a time bomb. You have a girl in the picture now with the evangelical, the comic books, and the Beatles.
No, next up, clown suit, rifle, bell tower.
Right, but it doesn't get that way. But it gets pretty bad in the way that he almost kills himself, and he leads people in the traumatic direction with him. So, anyways. What happens is Lori is this girl that he's really obsessed with, but he can't get the nerve to ask her out or anything. And besides that, her boyfriend Chris is a mortician. So now you got a funeral home. You got a funeral home, and who wants to be an undertaker in the mix? So now you have the dark and the light. So basically everything is setting up for Just a bad, bad mix, a real dark, dark road that he's about to go down. And what happens is he continues to try to go to college, but he can't because he can't focus, and he hears the voices in his head or something to that effect, and he's drawing. This is pretty insane. He's drawing the actual voices on paper. So you see, like, the demons in his head, like,
yeah.
One, two, three, and inside...
And he draws one of the demons. This is crazy now. He draws one of the demons, and he names it Vile Corrupt. And he gets in this fantasy about boxing with it. So he has this demon called Vile Corrupt, and he's boxing the demon. And meanwhile, all this imagery of the evangelical. See, I'm trying to merge what you were saying in the earlier point.
No, I know.
And he tries to, and he attempts to continue to battle. And everywhere he goes. Now, this is a key point. Everywhere he goes, he points out and he sees the devil. He sees Satan. And he constantly lectures and preaches to people. Why are you near Satan? Don't be near Satan. Why are you near Satan? And he says, I see it, man. I see it. It's all programming, all Satan. And he's just going off the handle. And at one point in his life, the actual people, they get a call. One of his friends, the writing critic, gets a call. And I said, I think you better come down here because Daniel's here. And he goes, oh, okay. And the writer was sick and he had a flu. But even though he went down there, he sees Daniel in the water. He's dressed in white. And he's splashing people. And he's saying, let the water run through you. Or some kind of thing like that. But basically, the whole thing is this evangelical hammer, or whatever you want to call it, this torture device that they put him through, that he has to accept. When you force something that hard, the outcome you get is something either you get it soon or you get it later. And in Daniel's case, it just progressed worse and worse. And eventually what happened is he had to move back. He's back in with his parents. After being through like four or five mental asylums, there's actually a clip in the movie where he's singing this song about how he gets this obsession with Mountain Dew.
Yeah, that's not good. Enough caffeine in that to send a rocket up.
Yeah, he loves Mountain Dew, and he's singing on the phone.
Yeah, this film was hot at Sundance, right?
Right, it was hot at Sundance, right? You're on it. You know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And basically, what happens is. His parents struggle. There's actually a scene in the movie where they're flying Daniel back. This is the crazy story. They're flying Daniel back, and he thinks he has a message from God. Now, evangelical people, if you're listening and you think I'm crazy, listen to this point. So they're flying in the plane. He decides that he wants to do something divine. So he pulls out the keys. Because everywhere he sees something prophetic. So he pulls out the keys out of the plane while they're flying. The plane starts going into a tailspin. Luckily, his dad was a World War II fighter. You can't make this stuff up, Bob. He was a World War II fighter ace. So he's able to adjust it and able to land on some trees. But what happened? But the funny thing is Daniel, he's so obsessed with seeing the signs. Now this is important for everybody. He's so obsessed with seeing the signs of the evangelical, he doesn't even know what he did was wrong. He thinks in his mind it's divine and he's pleasing his family.
Yeah, well, and that's...
I just crashed a plane. Aren't you happy?
Gee, Minnie.
And now if you want to see a parallel, you can look at. The suicide bombers.
Yeah.
Or you could look at
Timothy McVeigh.
Timothy McVeigh, right.
The woman who drowned her kids in Texas, the other woman who beat her kids to death with a rock in Texas.
Right.
Susan Smith, who drove her kids into a lake in a car in South Carolina. Yeah, and the thing is, every time you hear one of these stories, eventually you find out that there's some fundamentalist religion behind it.
Exactly, and that's the point I'm saying. When you force something on somebody, it traumatizes them for the rest of his life. Daniel still struggles with seeing the number 7, seeing the number 9. There are devils and angels in his painting constantly mixed in with pop culture.
Oh, yeah.
And he can't escape it, and it's like someone might see something entertaining, but they took it to a psychiatrist and they said, this guy, He goes, this guy's going to heaven because he's already been to hell. When he looked at the painting.
Right.
So what doesn't make sense to me is when you force something on somebody, you're taking them the road down to hell physically. Because just because you believe in something, if it was divine and if it was evangelical, you don't force something on somebody.
No. If you go and look at it's in the very front of the Quran, the very famous verse that says there is no compulsion in religion. And you know, in Christian teaching, you know, my burden is light. You know, that kind of thinking. Yeah, sure, but you can make the argument that this young man had something profoundly wrong. You know, not necessarily wrong with him, but some molecule was turned 45. You know, turned a bubble off plum.
Well,
and that contributed to it. But if you take that and you immerse it in the literalism and the absolute conviction that we live in this this, you know, this woman in Georgia says that Harry Potter is encouraging children to believe in witchcraft.
Well, you know what's crazy,
you know, that
about the whole evangelical right is they can't see the extreme, like, levels. Like, you see Focus on the Family. This is so funny. But turning up one level, and it's the Phelps family.
Yeah.
They'll be denouncing the Phelps family, but meanwhile, they'll put it back on the Focus on the Family level, and they'll be like, oh, well, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, because they're not out there actually screaming, die, fag. They're just thinking it.
Did you know that the Phelps family, there was a rush on the radio? I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a rush to put them on the air, because if they weren't going to go on the air, they were actually going to go over to protest that Amish family and their children and tell them that they're going to hell. You see, there's something.
Oh, I didn't hear it. Oh, are you telling me that the Phelps gang?
I'm telling you the truth.
The funeral started today for those poor little girls. They descended on that. Oh, yuck.
And I want to tell you something. I heard something scary. Alan invited them on the show so they would talk, because he wanted to hear them about Mike Gallagher. Mike Gallagher, actually, you know the whole radio host, Mike Gallagher?
Yeah.
He did something sort of like a necessary evil, as you could call it. He gave them an hour on the radio to preach what they wanted to.
So that they would leave those people alone in Pennsylvania.
Leave those people alone, right. So I guess they were in the area doing a promo tour or whatever, and the Phelps sisters said they wanted to go on the Combs show. And I guess Combs didn't know it, but they just showed up on the studio. So he's actually in the studio with them, and it's like hearing, I'm not evangelical, but it was like hearing these sisters were possessed.
They are. I
don't know what they were possessed by, but it's scary.
They are possessed, but they are possessed by their father. Okay.
Oh, that's
you know,
that's
go read the bio of Fred Phelps at Wikipedia. This guy, I mean. Jim Jones, David Koresh got nothing on this clown.
Channeling the emotional demons of the past, of their ancestry. I think that's what they were doing.
You know, and the thing is, if you go through that Wikipedia bio, you'll find out that Fred Phelps is also an unrepentant white supremacist. You know, everybody, he wants to go to a very lonely little heaven. Yeah, somewhere in, he just wants to be left the heck alone.
But now the question is, what is so different between that degree and the other degree where people say, well, that's crazy, and then they can't see that, they can't see.
There is not a dime's worth, there's not a dime's worth of difference. That's why people got so angry with me back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio around here, David, when I pointed out that, you know, Fred Phelps is an ordained Baptist minister, and the Baptist Church has never to this day rescinded that ordination, and they have the power to do so. So as long as they continue to let him be an ordained Baptist minister, then they are complicit in his hate.
You know, I got to tell you, when I was listening to that Phelps sister's interview on the Combs, I was like, okay, where's the other sister, Babe Buchanan?
Oh.
Good line. Hey, David, we got to roll on. I got I'm stacked up here.
All right, no problem. Bye.
Take it easy.
Later.
Bye now. I got to see the film. I got to see that film. Let's go to Utah, where Carla is calling in. Carla, good to hear from you. Thanks for waiting. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I'm from Clearfield, Utah, and today I just participated in a walk with a young man that started on Monday, the 2nd of October, and he is going to walk all the way from the border of Idaho to the border of Utah and Wyoming for Iraqi veterans. And
oh, wonderful.
Walking approximately 20 miles every day for so many of the Iraqi the soldiers that have died. And he's a nonpartisan. He's about a 28-year-old young man. His name is Marshall Thompson. His family is traveling with him. He was pushing his 13-month-old daughter in a stroller, and she was just well-behaved and everything. And in Logan yesterday, they had about 150 to 200 people lining the street. His webpage is soldierspeace.com.
Soldierspeace.com, okay.
And it shows, you know, his itinerary, you know, where each day where he's walking. And he just felt that he just has been back from Iraq for 2 months. And he just felt that he had to do something for his own peace and for the soldiers over there. Because he's, you know, he's a public affairs soldier, a journalist. And so, when he's out there interviewing and writing stories, he says the soldiers are just so disillusioned, demoralized, because some of them are on their second and third tour.
Yes.
There's no end to the war. They keep saying, you're going to be here until the war is over, but, you know, until the mission is accomplished.
Right.
But they said they have none. And he's just sort of trying to bring maybe attention to it. He says, this walk won't help. He doesn't think the walk will help, but maybe the politicians will hear about it and, through, word of mouth. And
well, it's a matter of taking things into our own hands and empowering ourselves within the framework of what is supposed to be a representative democracy, isn't it, Carla?
Mm-hmm. And Steve Olson, who is running for Congress against our representative, Rob Bishop, walked with Marshall yesterday when he started from Logan, and then most of today. I met him up at 11 o'clock, and I walked with him until about 6, and he had about another day, another hour before he would rest. And then on Saturday, he's walking through Farmington, Bountiful, and then on Saturday, he meets at the Capitol and at 8 o'clock, and then he'll walk down State Street. And that's that. And so, he'll finish on the 31st in St. George, and just an awesome young man, very quiet, just has a serenity around him. And
well, I'm looking at the website now, Carla, and I mean, this is a moving statement. While it still seems like a wonderful dream to be home, I can't rest knowing that all of the brave men and women sacrificing in Iraq, there's not enough being done to bring them home.
Mm-hmm. And he's got on his, shirt that he has. He's, it's called, on the back of it, it's the soldiers, peace.com. The soldier, and this is the quote, the soldier above all others pray for peace. For it is the soldier who must suffer and bear the deepest wounds and scars of war. General Douglas MacArthur.
Yes.
And it was also there was one lady that joined us for a little bit, and she has a grandson that is in the Marine Corps, and he's going back for his third tour, and she's quite upset, and she says
it has to end, Carla.
He can't even talk about it. She says he's just so, his voice shakes, and she says she's got to do something. She was going to go talk to Rocky, and I think our Matheson, who used to be Scott Matheson or Jim Matheson, he's running for re-election. but it's got to stop. You know, he's just saying he wants to, you know, have a responsible withdrawal. And I think the thing is, let the Iraqi people decide. They want us out, you know?
Well, yeah, they say it in no uncertain terms. And now there's new survey data out that says that something on the order of 70% of the soldiers coming home say that our troops are stretched thin and that we cannot accomplish whatever, you know, that we can't accomplish the mission there. Merciful.
And to me, that, and what I did, you know, what Marshall's doing and what the other people, that's the way I can, you know, support the troop, because, you know, I support, you know, Suzanne Swift, the one that was raped by her.
Yes.
The soldiers and Lieutenant Wada, you know, the guy from Ohio.
Yeah, Aaron Watada, yes.
And also, you know, I'm a retired Army reservist. I was aware of his, you know, 358th Reserve Unit, and, you know, so, you know, that's
well, there's support. You know, there is no respect for our there's no respect for our military men and women in the conduct of this war.
Mm-mm.
Plain and simple, Carla. Yeah. And the only way that we manifest any respect is to end because it's an illegal war. It's a dirty war. It's an immoral war, and it has to end.
Mm-hmm.
It simply has to end. And I'm so glad that you went out and walked with this young man today. And you know, at some point, I'd love to hear from him on the program and let him tell people about what he's doing.
Okay, I will work to get. In fact, I thought about that while I was walking. I said, I wish I had Bob Kincaid's number with me. I would put him in contact, and so I'll see what I can do.
Okay, well, thank you, Carla. Have a wonderful evening.
Same to you.
Great to hear from you.
You're welcome.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And a quick trip to the news. When we come back, I've got some stuff you've got to hear. If you're on hold, please stay there. We'll get to you. But there's a disturbing trend coming out of all this. I know you're sick of Foley, but it's what happens. It's the aftermath of Foley that I think we've got to begin paying attention to. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill today, a House ethics panel made up of both Democrats and Republicans approved the subpoena of dozens of documents related to former Representative Mark Foley's salacious email scandal. The panel says its investigation will be concluded in weeks, not months, but it's not clear whether it will be done before the November 7th elections. In Idaho today, officials confirmed that the death of a 2-year-old last month was from tainted spinach, the second death from the recent E. coli outbreak. Lawyers involved in previous food poisoning cases say the companies could be charged with violating a law that makes it illegal to sell or distribute items found to be unsafe for human or animal consumption. In California today, an appellate court ruled that the state's ban on same-sex marriage does not violate the constitutional rights of gays and lesbians. The judge says that's because of the state's domestic partner law. New York and Washington state courts have upheld similar bans. In Baghdad today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with Iraqi leaders, including Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. She urged a quick resolution to end the sectarian violence, adding that the situation is not being helped by, quote, political inaction. Officials report 13 U.S. soldiers have been killed there since Monday, the highest 3-day death toll since the war began. In Afghanistan today, NATO took over control of the eastern region. It's now in control of the entire country. The NATO force consists of 33,000 troops, more than 13,000 of them American. In London tomorrow, representatives from the U.S., Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China will meet to discuss the Iranian nuclear standoff. And next week, the Security Council will begin discussing possible sanctions against Tehran over its refusal to stop enriching uranium. The oil ministers from the 11 members of OPEC may cut back production in response to the recent drop in oil prices, One delegate says an emergency meeting may be held in the coming weeks to decide when to implement the cutbacks. A study by the Institute of Highway Safety says head-protecting side airbags cut driver fatalities by a third in the past year. In SUVs, the death rate was cut by half. Those airbags will become standard equipment in all U.S.-made vehicles by 2010. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The XPRIZE Foundation has announced a $10 million prize for anyone who can sequence 100 human genomes within 10 days and 100 more within 6 months. Competitors include Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, astrophysicist Stephen Hawking, and television interviewer Larry King. Retailers report strong September sales except for Walmart. Analysts say lower gasoline prices and cooler temperatures contributed to the shopping spree. Workers at more than a dozen Goodyear tire plants in 10 states and Canada went on strike today. That follows a breakdown in negotiations between the tire maker and the steelworkers union. The Tribune Company fired the publisher of the Los Angeles Times today. He recently defied demands for staff cuts on the grounds that they would damage the newspaper. Former Hewlett-Packard chairwoman Patricia Dunn appeared in court today. She'll be arraigned in mid-November. She's one of 5 people who were indicted yesterday in connection with the media spying scandal. Fortune magazine reports that an alliance between Nissan Renault and Ford may be in the works. That follows a breakdown in talks between Nissan Renault and GM. Light sweet crude settled at $60.03 today. And for the third day in a row, the Dow Jones had a record high close. The Dow ended the day at 16 points at 11,866. NASDAQ up 15. S&P 500 up 3. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, 7.5 minutes after the hour. If you're on hold, we'll come to the phones. I promise, in just a moment. But I want to share something with you, and it is the next step in all of this Foley business, and it is terrifying, at least to me, because this is the stuff that pogroms are made of. Now, I want to, where do we start? Let's start at the bottom. Let's start with Flush Flimball. There was a talking point that has circled in the last couple of days. And that is blame the victim. Okay, and it goes from there to another place that is extremely disturbing. So we start with Flush.
Maybe the page, my original theory, maybe the page is out there engaged in some kind of chicanery. Maybe the page. You know, kids play pranks too. Maybe they were laughing at Foley in the page room. Maybe that Foley's making these advances, and maybe, hey, you know, let's egg this guy on. I've done my share of pranks. So it's for that reason that I ask, why in the how in the world did these instant messages find their way into the public domain after such a long time?
Okay, now let's just stop for a daggum minute. If people of reasonable mind watch the video of the Twin Towers collapsing, pancaking on themselves, and they say, you know, that looks a whole lot like a controlled demolition. A filthy little pig like Flush Flimball screams, well, my friends, these are clearly conspiracy theorists who hate America and are so out of their minds that they will do anything in their power to find a reason to blame George Bush and America for the most Islamo-fascists. Okay? If we note the fact that in Gahanna, Ohio, there were 860 registered voters and 3,000 people there voted for George Bush in the 2004 election, we're conspiracy theorists. Meanwhile, if Flush wants to come out and say, you know, what if this was all just a democratic plot against the good, godly, upstanding, moral the Republican Party that's taking America to that shining city on the hill that Ronald Reagan used to talk about? My friends! Okay, I understand that the first inclination is to think that he's crunching on the Oxycontins again to get the refreshing burst of flavor, and he's doing them 60 at a time instead of 30. I understand. But it wasn't just Flush. It wasn't just Flush. You remember how Newt Gingrich came out early on in this scandal and said, well, you know, we couldn't really say anything about it because we would have been accused of gay bashing. Uh-uh. No. Nobody's going to accuse anybody of gay bashing because this guy's a pederast or a pedophile or... I forget my definitions. I'm sorry. Because we understand there's a profound profound difference between being gay and being a kitty diddler. A little bit later, Paul Weyrich shows up on National Public Radio on All Things Considered. Now, this is yesterday. He's part of the Free Congress Foundation. He's the CEO, as a matter of fact. And, you can hear it for yourself. You can see where this is going. This is the reason... You can see the reason spinning out in the right wing fascist community for what they want to do with all of this. Foley is going to become a cause celeb for the Matthew Shepherdization of the entire country.
Here is the real problem. It has been known for many years that Congressman Foley was a homosexual. Homosexuals tend to be preoccupied with sex.
Huh?
The idea that he should be continued or should have been continued as chairman of the Committee on Missing and Exploited Children is...
Pause for a minute, Agnes. I thought... What, Agnes?
Nothing.
Just needed you to pause for a second, please. I thought Bill Clinton was the one who was obsessed with sex. Didn't you? I mean, that's all we heard. That's all we've heard for the last 10 years is, you know, Bill Clinton was a sex fiend. But now it turns out it's the gay people. Who isn't obsessed with sex? Why, it's the Republican Party. No, because Mark Foley's a Republican. Go ahead, please.
For many years that Congressman Foley was a homosexual. Homosexuals tend to be preoccupied with sex. The idea that he should be continued or should have been continued as chairman of the Committee on Missing and Exploited Children is, you know, given their knowledge of that, is just outrageous.
Now, before we go on, I think I can say, Mr. Ryrick, that there are quite a few people who would take exception to the statement that homosexuals are preoccupied with sex.
Well, I don't care whether they take exception to it. It happens to be true. I mean...
That is your opinion.
Well, it's not my opinion. It's the opinion of many psychologists and psychiatrists who have to deal with them.
Who have to deal with them. See, this guy still comes from that school of thought that says that anybody who doesn't have sex like Paul Weyrich likes to have sex, and God only knows what that means, is somehow diseased. These people are obsessed with sex. I mean, these people are like the really sick, twisted version of, come on, the being there, Chauncey Gardner, who I like to watch. These are those people. You know, well, I don't care what their opinion is. It happens to be true. See, one of the things you will not hear on this program is me telling you what the truth is. I will tell you what the facts are, as I understand them, and you will tell me, you know, and you call in and you tell me your idea of what the facts are. We are fact-based. We are, you know, and this was their snide little insult, we are reality-based. See, most of the time when you listen to the right wing, you will not hear them talk about facts or reality. They will talk about truth because they understand that truth is a fluid, slippery thing that can be different things to different people. They accuse us of being the moral relativists, but in point of fact, it is them. Because they make up their truths to fit their individual needs on a day-in and day-out basis. How many different media outlets have repeated this stupid bug spray that the Foley scandal developed because some Democrat leaked them to embarrass the Republicans at election time? They've known about this for years. The Republicans have. They covered it up. Nancy Pelosi didn't cover it up. Steny Hoyer didn't cover it up. The Democrats didn't cover this up. The Repigs did, because they knew they had a gay man in their midst. Who, more than gay, had a rather profound fascination with young men. There may actually be a difference between pedophilia and what Foley was doing. He was cruising for youngsters. If you go back and you look in your biblical history, you'll find that guys like him, it's actually if you go back to the original translations out of the Greek, out of the Koine Greek of Paul's letters, when all these weirdo fundamentalists are saying, you know, Saint Paul's the one that says, you know, he tells us you can't be no homo. There was a class of people in the Roman Empire at the time of Saint Paul. Saint, my left hind foot. Saul of Tarsus. Older men who kept young boys around for sexual liaisons. I think the word was, catamite. Catamite. C-A-T-A-M-I-T-E. Look it up. And that's what that's what you've got in the form of Foley. But now the message has changed, and it's gay people molest children. And you know what? This, oh boy, doesn't this work nicely. This is an argument against two loving, committed, same-sex people being able to adopt or being able to provide a decent home to a foster child. Mark Foley is the walking, talking embodiment of why gay marriage is against God's law. Now they are actively arguing that gay people are a threat to children when there is not a single shred of competent scientific evidence. Paul Weyrich, that's Paul Weyrich. You know, he's a right winger. He just makes crap up and calls it truth. Hands you a handful of chicken caca and tells you it's chicken salad, sunshine. So it goes from Paul Weyrich to, you know, our best friend. Yeah, you know, you just knew that Brother Pat Robertson couldn't stay away from this on the 700 Club. Oh, no, Lord, no. And he, now wait, here it comes. This is just plain and out there in your face bigotry. Check it out.
The news is the Republicans have formed a circular firing squad and they're firing away. It's just insane, this atavistic spirit to find blame just before an election. They'd be better to say, well, this man's gay, he does what gay people do, and so don't worry about it.
Okay, pause it. I'm going to vomit. What? Is it the audio that's...
Yes.
Okay.
Just my Wheaties.
Yeah. Pat Robertson just ruined Agnes's Wheaties. Did you hear that? They'd be better to say, well, this man's gay, he does what gay people do, and so don't worry about it. Keep going.
All they can say, we abhor this kind of conduct, but it's one person, and certainly the Christian people, the church people understand forgiveness, they
Satan?
Understand sin, and this isn't going to, quote, turn off a lot of voters because of that, but the more they make out of it, and the more they begin to have recriminations, the worse it's going to be for them, it seems like to me. But anyhow, I don't run the congressional leadership in Washington. They have their own agenda.
Well, they'd be better to say, well, this man's gay, he does what gay people do. You ever heard that before? I've heard that before. I've heard that in the Deep South. I've heard that in the words that are used by unreconstructed bigots, you know, like George Allen. Well, you know, they can't help it. That's just how they are. Don't let them around the women, folk. You know what I'm talking about. Sure you do. Let's see. So now Paul Weyrich says that gay people are just oversexed and they will, you know, they'll rut on a knothole in an old maple tree if they're given half a chance. Never minding the fact that there are far more Republican sex scandals than Democratic ones. But, you know, we know that. And they're just passing this off to an unsuspecting populace. I think we've had enough for the moment. I've got more. Because I've got the absolute pinnacle of bigotry still to come. But I hate to keep people waiting. Chino Deb is calling from Arizona. Welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. I had my little protest today. Probably about 20 people.
Oh, wonderful.
It was I was happy just that I was there. So I had some interesting people walk by. There was two couples that walked by me from England. And they asked me if we could impeach Blair too. And I said, well, Blair's going to be stepping down in April or May, from what I hear. And they said, well, we can't wait that long.
The world, you know, and there's a lot of truth in the name of the organization. The world literally can't wait.
Yeah.
But you know, you're kind of in the belly of the beast there where you are in Arizona, aren't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And then I had a lady that lives in Israel. She's up here visiting her mother. And we were standing out on the corner with our signs. And I don't know, she was a really neat lady. And she told me, some old man come driving by, and he gave her the middle finger. She was surprised that he even knew. So we had a good time, and I want to go back out there again. And what happened was I put an announcement in the newspaper, and some man was really upset at me because they put the announcement for Saturday instead of today. And so when I got home, the editor of the newspaper left a message with my husband, and I called him immediately, and he apologized and said that he got it mixed up, and he was really sorry, and he's going to make it up to us and let us put in a big ad.
Oh, very
nice. Our cause. So I thought that was really sweet.
That is very nice. And, you know, if he's already got you scheduled for Saturday, why not?
Yeah, I'm thinking about going back out there again if it's not raining. But, yeah, you're right.
No, wait, you're calling from Arizona. What are you doing talking about rain?
I know. I had to, right after I called you today, it rained about a half hour after I called you. It poured.
Yeah, and when it does rain there, I mean it's not like one of those little gentle showers. You get gully washers, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Could I do? I know you're in a hurry, but
hurry. Take your time.
I just want to share you. I have a friend that lives in Baghdad.
Mm.
Okay, and we touch base every once in a while.
Yes.
And I'm just going to share a little bit of my email to her and then share her email back.
Please do. Yes.
I said, Dear Foz, I just want to tell you before I retire, this is a couple days ago, last weekend, and do some homework, that I've been enjoying reading your son's blog, College. I have had the opportunity to visit his blog site a few times. He's a delightful young man, a warm and kind heart, and very intelligent. And then I go on to say, I am trying to organize my protest rally against Bush. It is very hard. No one seems to want to be interested. I sent an email out to all my friends and received back two emails that cursed me out and told me never to send them anything like that anymore. I have a father and brother that are pro-Bush. When I phoned them this weekend to report to them my plans, one said he had to go and the other one was silent, told me I amazed him. So I've been accused of being un-American, and I better be grateful I live in America. And the most famous quote I hear of all time is, you better be thankful we are in Iraq and the terrorists are not over here in America. So anyway, her response back, I wrote some more, but just to give you a little bit of the content. She said, Dear Deb, well, I'm sorry for your suffering, but proud of your work. I keep the good and right things you are doing to stop the bleeding of innocent Iraqis who died to let selfish, ugly, stupid Americans who live. Don't be sad. In your town, the ignorant ration is high. But in New York, California, Washington, D.C., I saw a huge number of people who are against crazy and stupid Bush. Everyone supports this war. He or she is with bloodshed. She meant everyone that doesn't support the war is with bloodshed of Iraqis. She gets very verbal, but she's very hurt. She said, let them go to hell. Tell them, Faza said, you are just killers. Go out of our country. You've ruined everything in our life more than what Saddam did. Not impactful.
Oh.
She said, love you, Deb, and thank you from all my heart, and may God bless you.
Oh, and you know, whatever God has left in Iraq, may the blessings be on that person, because what she says is true, Deb.
No.
It's true. It's one of the things that makes things sort of difficult inside my own skull. I come from a creative background. You know, I fooled around in theater and speech and writing poetry and all of that stuff. And so I've got a pretty healthy imagination, and it doesn't take me very long. Having seen some of the photos that I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen as well, of what we have done over there.
It does to imagine what happens to a family that's lost a 3-year-old or an 8-year-old or a grandmother, you know, to a Tomahawk cruise missile. You know, this is really they aren't works of the imagination. It's just it's more like an exercise in empathy. And I come back time and again, Deb, time and again, and I ask, if this was being done to my people, if this was being done to my family, you know, because of the tradition I was raised in, you know, that whole do unto others as you'd have them do unto you thing? If this was being done to my people, my family, my children, how would I respond? And I got to think that it wouldn't be peaceful. I wouldn't take it lying down, and I wouldn't expect any citizen of the United States to take it lying down. If there were Chinese soldiers in your street in Arizona, what would you do?
I'd be as angry as she is.
And you would hope and you would work toward killing off as many of them. It's a natural response to being invaded. These aren't insurgents that are fighting our soldiers. These aren't terrorists that are fighting our soldiers. These are Iraqi people who want us to get the hell out.
Right.
Why is it so hard? I guess it's a nightly exercise in some sort of psychoanalysis that I sit here trying to figure out what sort of mental blocks exist in the minds of these right-wing killers that allow them to blithely slaughter civilians in the name of stability or democracy or some other, you know, some other handy mnemonic or meme or mindset. What is wrong with these people, Deb?
I don't know.
I don't either. And you know, you've got your friend is over there, and she knows her life is at risk every day because we're there. Because we are there. And you know what? The fact that I don't know if she is Sunni or Shia or Kurd, but the fact of the matter is, she's not the only one who says that that life was better under Saddam, even though Saddam was a beast. How low do we have to sink, for that to become truth? How low have we sunk? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
God, that just tears me to pieces.
Me too. I wanted to let you know that Keith Olbermann tonight, everybody watched him. He really tore into Bush again.
Good.
So, because three of the what do they call it in Congress, the young men?
Oh, the pages.
Pages. They came forth and about a Foley. So, please watch Keith Olbermann.
I'll be up for the rerun tonight.
Okay.
Deb, thank you so very kindly. So good to talk to you. I didn't mean to bring you down.
Oh no, that's okay. But you know what? I feel that somebody else understands the way I feel, and it makes me.
There are millions.
I'm not alone.
You're not. There are millions of us. There are millions of us. There are more people, I suspect, that feel the way we do than don't. Unfortunately, it's the people who don't and who have no morals, no ethics, and no conscience who are in charge of this slaughter. Maybe it changes after November 7th. I hope to God it does.
I do, too.
Thank you so much, Deb. So good to hear from you.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Thank you for all you do. And give Alice a hug for me. She's such a sweetheart.
Oh, I sure will. Okay. She is. She is a sweetheart. I'm a lucky guy.
Yeah, you are.
Thank you.
She's a lucky woman.
Bye now.
Thank you.
Oh, and let us know if you go back Saturday.
Okay, I will.
Okay, great. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And do we keep rolling? Okay. Yeah, let's go. Oh, yeah, Michael. Michael is calling from Columbus, Ohio. Michael, you were at a rally as well. We talked earlier. How did it go?
Yep. Well, you know, when I talked to you earlier, I was, you know, pretty excited, and I snuck in just about the last 5 minutes of the Guy James show, and I'm pretty excited, but, yeah, I've got mixed feelings now.
Why is that?
I don't know if this is a common experience after protests, but it kind of, we had maybe, I'm not real good at eyeballing crowd sizes, but I'd say we had maybe 75, maybe 100 people.
And you wanted to see more?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was enough of a crowd that we could, you know, really felt like we were doing something and saying something earlier in the day. I went there, I brought my dad a couple years ago bought me this bongo drum, and I don't know how to play it to save my life, but I brought it, and, you know, I thought, you know, I kind of felt like a dumb, I don't know, can I say it, dumbass?
Yeah, go ahead. No.
I kind of felt like a dumbass.
It's a bongo, you slap it, I mean.
Yeah, just like, I don't know how to play it, but I just threw it in the trunk, and I was like, you know, what the hell, you know. And I brought it, and everybody loved it, and the organizers kept calling me drummer when we were marching. They were like, drummer, come on, we need you, drummer. And so, you know, I just kind of kept the beat and helped keep the chants, you know, in rhythm and in sync. And
no, oh, that's cool.
It was cool, and, you know, I got to start a few chants myself. Hey, ho, ho, Bush and Cheney have got to go. Everybody seemed like that.
Well, you know, you can't beat the old standards.
Oh, yeah. And, Ken Blackwell, go to hell. Ken Blackwell, go to hell.
Oh, now, see, I like that.
Yeah, that one didn't last quite as long. I suppose it's a little tacky telling people go to hell, but, God, that.
No, well, no, you know, I don't necessarily think you're exhorting him to do so much as observing a known fact.
That's a very good point. That's true. But I guess I just have mixed feelings now, just because it's not. I mean, I appreciate everything World Can't Wait is doing, and it's not like I'm crazy. And I really thought somebody was going to approach us with a megaphone about halfway through and say, we just got the news. Bush and Cheney and Hastert, they've all stepped down and are turning themselves over to The Hague. And
but there's got to be a little tiny mustard seed's worth down inside of you that hopes that somehow or another that's what happens at some point.
I mean, you know it's not going to happen today. I mean, you know, their call is, the World Can't Wait, their call is, you know, Bush step down. And you know,
well, I mean, let's be realistic, Michael. That's not going to happen. He is not going to leave voluntarily.
Well, somebody on my way back to my car. A couple sitting outside a bar or a restaurant stopped me and asked me about my drum. And I told him what I had been doing, and the guy asked me, "You really think that's going to work?" And I had to be honest with him. I told him, you know, the only way Bush is going to step down is if they, you know, drag him out in handcuffs. And, unfortunately, that's probably not going to happen either, but you got
to
do what you can.
But you know what, Michael? You have to make the attempt.
Right.
You have to try to be part of it. I read a note earlier from one of our friends in Pittsburgh who was very very downcast about the outcome of that rally there. But we can't be too depressed about it. What's that old saw about the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. It's
right.
Absolutely true.
Right.
And the thing is, if there is no one standing up to be a leader, if there is no one standing up to be a moral compass, to be a signpost toward reality, then when people do start looking, they won't know.
Right.
You know, you guys are doing something very valuable, very valid, and very earnest and very honest. You engaged in free speech today, and you know what? For all I know, it may have been your last chance to do so. We don't know. This the torture we call it for shorthand. We call it a torture bill.
Right.
But you know, it's so much more than torture. It's the fact that they can indefinitely detain you until such time as they are able to determine whether or not you are a citizen. And that's even if you were born in the United States.
Yeah.
an American citizen can be declared an enemy combatant and not have any recourse to a lawyer whatsoever now. I don't know what else you might have had planned for today, Michael, but I can guarantee you that there was nothing you could have done that would have been more important than what you did.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. It's just I heard you talking about the Pittsburgh rally earlier. I hope in some of the other cities that were bigger. Columbus, Ohio, it's, the heart of the beast, so to speak.
Yeah.
I wish more people, I just see the, Mexico and the protests there, and it's just like...
Well, do you remember the immigration rallies of earlier this year, Michael?
Yeah, that's true.
I think it's about time that we had better get that group of people motivated again, because this bill, this torture bill, this indeterminate detention bill, Congress doesn't, how the right wing got all angry and everything? Well, they didn't pass an immigration bill, blah, 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 blah. They're waffling. They're not trying to protect America's borders, and they've passed now the money to build this 700-mile fence, okay? But with the torture bill, and this is, we've got to get, it's about that whole thinking outside the box thing. We've got to realize that the people who are carrying this country on their backs, who happen not to have been born here, those people are in dire jeopardy right now, and they had better hit the streets again, and they better hit the streets with us with the same demand that George Bush be peacefully and lawfully removed from office, because the detention camps have already been built for them, and they cannot prove that they are in this country legally. And as such, they can be held indefinitely, and no one can be told where they are.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No. I was just gonna. All of that fell into place for me today, and it's not paranoia, and it's not tinfoil helmet, and it's not black helicopter, and I'm not none of that. It is a simple fact. There are what, 11 million people in this country who cannot document their right to be here, and all George Bush has to do is say that they are enemy combatants, and they're gone. Never to be heard from again behind a wire fence that has already been built by Halliburton in states all over this nation. It is chilling. I was absolutely blown away when that dawned on me. We don't need an immigration bill.
Yeah.
We just got the immigration bill, and the instant that they decide they want to do so, they can round up every I don't like Latino, I don't like Hispanic. These are indigenous peoples to North America, and they can round them up.
Right.
And you know what? Some of us will be caught up in that. So, what you did today, don't feel too bad. You're experiencing the post-event letdown. But
yeah.
you turned a light on today, Michael. You and others like you. And I applaud your efforts.
Thanks. I was just thinking as you're talking, it's a bit ironic. I remember seeing, the immigrant rallies and the size of the immigrant movement, both legal and illegal marched in support of the. It's just kind of ironic that it almost seems like immigrants are more willing to fight for what this country stands for than a lot of us, but. Not us, but
no, I know what
you're saying. It's,
yeah, and we're I said it earlier. Susan noted it, and I maintain that it is true. It is factual. There's that word, true. It is factual that life in fascism is very easy as long as you keep your head down, and keep your keep a low profile. Don't make any noise. It took courage to do what you did today. It took courage for the 50 people who showed up in Pittsburgh. It took courage to stand on that street corner in Arizona like Deb did. That is real courage in America. It doesn't take any courage to follow along, blindly follow the lead of a murderer. There's no courage in that, Michael.
Yeah.
I hope the next time something like this happens, you'll be out there again.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, it's very good to hear from you. And it's very good to hear from you. And practice on the bongo there.
You'll have to put the phone down by it next time and give us a couple of riffs, okay?
Yeah. Oh, and thanks for reading my poem last night. I couldn't imagine a better reading of it than that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very kindly for writing it and sharing it with me. And let me know next time something like that hits you, okay?
Yeah. The old Sarge, he actually posted it on his on Powers and Morrison on his article a couple days ago too.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But yeah, I've tickled to see that, but. Thanks for all that you do. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for what you do, Michael. You have a good evening.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Does it make sense what I just said? Do you understand what this torture bill actually means for the absolute most vulnerable people in our country? These are getting to be more and more dangerous times. Let's go to Sarge. Calling from Southern Mississippi with a report about San Francisco. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bob. I was going to open with something kind of off the wall, but
go ahead.
After hearing Michael and Deb, I think I'd rather open with these people are real patriots, and I salute them.
Yes, exactly.
I totally agree with what you said to them, and as someone who served in two branches of the military, I can't tell them how much pride I have in what they've done and how much respect I have for them. And I hope they know that I think they're great Americans.
Thank you, Sarge.
I wanted to report a march in San Francisco. Cody checked in, and it went very well. It went very well. They had to close down Market Street. And Daniel Ellsberg was there, the psychiatrist from the
Pentagon Papers.
And he was there. And Cody got to meet up with him, and he talked to him about Horn, as a matter of fact. And Cody said it was just a wonderful, wonderful event, and it was raining, pouring down rain, and still people poured out. So they were very, very happy with the turnout in San Francisco.
Wonderful, wonderful. Any idea what kind of numbers?
He didn't give me any numbers, but he's sending me some information that he got, and he just gave me a brief check-in because he was headed to class and he didn't have much time. But he said he was just overwhelmed by the way it came out.
So great.
We've had some good ones. We've had some bad ones, but I'd say...
No, I don't think there were any bad ones, Sarge.
Well, you know, you were talking about the one in Pittsburgh.
Well, I mean, it was just there weren't a lot of people, and I think that depressed some folks. But you know, if you've got the guts to keep standing up even in a small crowd, you know, it's easy to stand up in a million people.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, but courage and patriotism is what happens when there's only 2, 5, 10, 1 of you. You know what I mean?
Sure, that's where. Well, yeah, like sitting down here in Mississippi and trying to fight the governor and all these.
Yeah, can you?
Legislators, it ain't easy.
Yeah, could you imagine what a World Can't Wait rally would have looked like in Jackson today?
Wait, did you know they had them?
Did they really?
They had one, yes, sir. They sure did. I don't know the results of it. I haven't heard, but I do know there was one.
You know, more people needed to show up in some places, Sarge. But I am damn sure not going to criticize anybody who did.
Well, I tell you what, I'm not either. I told you what I think about it.
Yeah,
I mean, and
that's heroism. That is courage. That is bravery.
Sir. Yes, sir. And people like Deb and Michael and Cody. Well, Cody was in San Francisco, but still, I mean, every one of them that stepped out, man, they're heroes. I mean, let's don't take nothing away from.
Well,
none
yeah,
of.
And you know, our good friend Shelby LaPrey was there at Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
there are, and as I haven't heard from him, but I know that Bruce Birch himself was at the one either in Greensboro or Charlotte, you know, wherever it was, he went to it.
Well, I'm waiting on Cassie to call in right now. I'm hoping maybe she'll pop in shortly with a report because she was going to one today in Texas. So I'm hoping that came out well. Before I go, I'm going to end it with something funny here.
Okay, go ahead.
I hope it's funny.
Okay.
But I've heard that Cheney and his wife came out and made a statement on the Volek situation, and they said they were just really, really angry that Kerry outed Volek. I'm leaving on that one. Talk to you later.
All right, that's a good quitting place. Bye-bye. Thanks, Sarge. They're incensed. That's beautiful. That's gorgeous. But that's where we are. I know here in West Virginia a lot of caring, committed people who show up for causes. West Virginia Patriots for Peace. My anti-mountaintop removal friends. You know, they're not anti-mountaintop removal. They're pro-West Virginia's future. Trying to literally save it. And the fact is, a lot of times when you go to these events, and even the ones that I can make, I stand here convicted. I stand here guilty. I wasn't anywhere today. I was sitting behind this board running radio shows. Zach and me. I didn't go anywhere. I didn't march. I didn't even sit in my front yard with a sign. Okay? But when I do get to go out to these things, quite often I see the same people in every one. And that disturbs me because that tells me, like I've said, that the movement isn't growing. But just like you cannot force democracy on Iraq at the barrel of a gun, you cannot compel people to stand up and be patriots if it is damn well not in them. In the 18th century, the American Revolution started with less than 30% support in the colonies. By the time it was over, everyone was in favor of the revolution. Except the ones who had, left. That's where we are. There are a lot of sunshine patriots. I'm trying to remember right now the Samuel Adams quote that is at whiterosesociety.org. You can go and see it for yourself if you want. But ours is not the first generation to wonder where the crowds are. And the fact that there weren't 10,000 people where you are, or 20,000 somewhere else, does not by any stretch of the imagination mean that what you were doing is any way less valid. Well, Ben, have you taken down the Samuel Adams quote? Doggone it. There it is. No. If ye love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, go home from us in peace. We ask not your counsels or arms. Crouch down and lick the hands which feed you. May your chains set lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that ye were our countrymen. Let's go to the phones. Chipperback joins us for the first time. Thanks for calling. Great to hear from you.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
You know, I only found out about Head On about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad I did, because it's nice to see people who are thinking the way I'm thinking about what's going on in this country. And it's just good to see, and I hope that Head On stays around for a long time to come. You know, I was listening to a lot of the about all these marches recently, and how it just seems like people have just gotten off beat and not gotten involved. Bob, I'm telling you, there's a big march that everybody needs to be a part of, and it's coming up. It's in November. It's on November 7th, to be exact. It's on Election Day. March, people. If you want to march a friend to the poll.
Yeah.
March someone to the polls who feels they have no stake in the system. That's what I've been doing I live in Connecticut, and until this year, we've been downtrodden in this state since 2004, but now we found some hope because we have a governor that we're trying to run out of town who was an enabler in some of the biggest corruption this state ever saw. We have a former governor sitting in jail now because they took our tax money to build his summer home.
Yes, I know. Yep.
Well, you know about Governor Rowland. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to run his enabler, Jody Rell, right out of town. We're running her out of that office on November.
What are you going to do about the Joe Manum?
Oh, Joe Lieberman? Well, there's a man named Ned Lamont that people are getting behind more and more every day. Where I live in Connecticut, during the primary, some of Joey's people came through knocking on door to door. We told them to the block, you guys might as well keep moving. Because we had a Lamont sign at literally every house on my block. Every house. That's how ticked off people are.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. It is possible to empower yourself in this process.
Well, I can tell you, the 35-year-old black man in this country, I've had to spend an entire life having to empower myself. But I've also found that if you are willing to stand up, other people will stand up right with you. And that's what I've been doing. I've been registering voters. I've been going out and telling people. I've been starting with my friends. I have good friends who have never voted. And I began this in 2004. I told some friends, you feel you have no stake in the system, I'll tell you what. There's only one way you're going to get a stake. You got to get franchised. You got to get involved. And I even made a deal with them. I said, I'm going to pick you up at 6 a.m. when the polls open. And then right after you vote, I'm going to take you to breakfast. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Do whatever you have to do. But we got a big march coming up on November 7th.
You're darn right, and you know it's the biggest march this country may have had. You know, I thought the 2004 presidential elections were important. I don't think that it can touch what's going on. You know, and these are supposed to be off year midterm elections. You know, no big deal, whatever.
I'll tell you what got me inspired for this year, especially what happened down in Mexico.
Yeah,
when they tried to take people's votes, and those people in Mexico were saying, we're not having it. We'll hit the streets. And it didn't get AMLO elected, but now the folks in power know people are going to be watching you like a hawk. I see what's happening all over this hemisphere. I see what's happening in Chile. I see what is happening in Venezuela. What happened twice in Venezuela.
Yeah.
Now they're trying to make Chavez sound like he's so crazy. Yet you know something, go down there. 60% of those people in a runoff 4 years ago said, this is the guy we want.
Yeah.
They tried to diebold it. They tried to do everything. And that's what we need to do here. We need to, if you want to beat diebold, what we have to do is get so many people registered and get so many people to the poll where they'll need a trillion diebold machines to steal it.
Exactly.
And it still won't matter. Folks, I know it gets down. I get frustrated too. But we got to dig in because it's not because think of the guy. I want to leave you with this, Bob. When you start thinking that it doesn't matter, think about those guys who are freezing at Valley Forge.
Yeah.
Think about them. Think about Frederick Douglass railing to the cause basically by himself. Think about Harriet Tubman on the Underground Railroad. Think about Victoria Woodhull. Think about those brave men in blue who went to fight for this union between 1861 and 1865. Think of Mary Ellen Lees, who said we need to raise less corn and raise more hell. Think about men like my great-great-great-grandfather who went over to make the world safe for democracy in a trench at Verdun. Think about all those men who went over to fight Hitler in World War II. Think of our boys now who are right now sitting in Iraq, they know what's wrong and they're waiting for a miracle. We're the miracle they're waiting for. We are the next line of American patriots, and we can't be, as Thomas Paine said, we can't be summertime soldiers and sunshine patriots. It's winter at Valley Forge, folks, and this is our 1776. Grab your musket and get in the game.
Amen.
And Bob, thanks for doing this show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for those words. I'm fired up and the show's over. Now what am I going to do?
Hey, tomorrow the fight continues.
That's right.
Good night, Bob. I'll see you tomorrow.
Take care. Bye now. Our good friend Chipper Beck, first-time caller from Connecticut, a regular in the chat room. Yes, dear.
And Bob, Freckles wanted to let us know that there were 500 people at the Austin rally.
Good. Good.
Thank you, Freckles.
Thank you. And you heard from her. That's Agnes. She produced the show tonight. John Fox, you heard from, too. He's the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network down in Sydney, Australia. Brian Reznor announces. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the podcasts, and the archives of all the programming on the Horn. Shelby Lepre at RadioPower.org partners with us in streaming this programming. They both do it on a gratis basis. If you appreciate what they do, help them. Okay? Please. Peter Godbold at Godbold Computer Services of Tallahassee, Florida is our IT professional. We have fabulous moderators in the Head On Radio Network chat room. If you've never been to the chat room, you really should go by. Every program on the Horn happens because there are several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, and they get up every day and they go and they build the American dream. And in doing that, they support the Horn, and they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.